something you want to form alliances after a lesson. Good morning, everybody. I don't think we're going to be very long, but that's going to be giving over to the department. Welcome, Minister, with your entourage. Ladies and members, the first thing I want to do is to apologize for having this meeting today. The reason we're having it today is we usually have our meetings on Wednesday. So the reason we're having it today is because we wanted to hear the report that we're going to be getting from the Minister in charge. And as you know, Wednesdays are cabinet meetings, so every Wednesday is in cabinet. So he agreed with me that he could come on a Tuesday and we talk to Parliament, and they agreed that we could have a meeting today. So I sincerely apologize. I know that some people have got other meetings. Feel free when you think that the other meeting has started, which was scheduled a long time ago. So in any case, we don't need a quorum in this one because it's just a report. So I hope you accept our apology, or my apology. Members, I really want to congratulate you, those who have won the election, and I want to say, keep it up. Whatever that you did to win the election, keep it up. Those who have not won, who lost in the election, I don't think they should be fair. It's just a question of asking yourself, where did I go wrong, so that you learn from the mistakes that you did. And you try and work harder. There's still another chance for the election. So for those who have won, we say congratulations to them. I think we all know that the United Nations Summit in 2000 took a decision that there are certain targets that should be reached by 2015. And today we've asked the department to help us, and most of those targets belong to health. So we asked the department to come and brief us as to how far are they with the Millennium Development Goals, because they are called Millennium Development Goals. And the department is here to tell us, where are they? Are we going to achieve them, or are we not going to achieve them? Fortunately, we've got the minister himself to tell us what is going on. So thank you very much, Minister, for coming. And we really welcome you, and we're looking forward to the report. I must say, maybe, Minister, you don't know that we've got a whip. We've got a new whip. Where the whip? That is Suleiman, but you are late. We've got Umamu, you didn't know, was sitting there. Because I usually say Umapi, but that color Umapi. Members, I want to say tomorrow we are going to have a meeting. It's going to be a very short meeting, it won't be more than 30 minutes. Tomorrow we'll be adopting five days with your report, so that by the time you go to the five days, it is next week, we've adopted that report. Okay, we'll start at 10, and by half past 10 we'll finish. And that's the time that we usually end our meeting. So, with that, I want to give over to you, Minister, to give us the report. So, up to you, Minister.
Thanks, Chairperson, honorable members. No, I was just confused about the technology because I don't have that, on my computer, and it's not there. I was wondering who is Papa Tajimi.
Even what's with me, we don't even have it yet. I'm going to go and sit down there. No, I've got it here too.
Okay. Yes, Chairperson, you said.
Maybe before you start, Minister, I take it that you know the members, but if you happen to know that, I'll just want them to introduce themselves. They won't tell about the results of the election, but just to say their names. Let me start with you.
Good morning, Minister
Kevin
and
Bagley,
SPDT.
Good
morning, Minister. My name is Christina Dube, known as I am in the corridor.
Morning, Minister. Morosu Sakhali Gitoy, ANC Law Board.
I'm one of my members, I know sitting this side, so that you can look at the minister, so that you don't sit. You know, there's something that you say in front of that. If my wife was present, there was nobody behind me. But it's a castle that you mustn't sit behind me if my wife is pregnant. I'm not sure that the minister's wife is pregnant, but even if she's not pregnant, but sit this side. Okay. Okay, Minister.
Yes, thanks, Chairperson. I don't know about taking it, but in my language, what is the word? It means, you know, when you communicate with somebody, you can see in their eyes how the communication is going. So if they see that the back, you don't know whether what you are saying is being understood. On the follow us, so you check in the out so that we can change our speech. Okay, thank you, Chairperson. The issue of Millennium Development Goals, while I don't want to assume that members might know or not know them, I actually started by just reminding us that these Millennium Development Goals are an international agreement known as the Millennium Declaration. Signed by all nations of the world, that means that state in September 2000 in the Millennium Summit, which coincidentally took place here in our own country. This target was to guide nations to reach certain targets by 2015. And all in all, the Millennium Development Goals are 8 in number. And as you can see, Chairperson, there are only 8, but 3 of them we don't want the public for one sector, which is health. All the other sectors are sharing the remaining linear development goals, and they are there, as you can see there. Now, the health-related one is Millennium Development 4, 5, and 6. Maybe let me go back to the other. Eradication of extreme poverty by and hunger by 2015. I'm not yet sure in terms of figures where we are, but a lot is being tied all over the world. As you know, it's also an economic issue anyway. The achievement of universal primary education in our country, I'm just saying this so that we can compare. We have already achieved that. The problem in education is not that of access. It's actually the issues of quality. That's what we are dealing with. But universal primary education has been achieved already before 2015. And there are more females, more girl child going to school than ever before. So in that regard, I can say we are definitely doing very well. What we are solving in South Africa is the issue of quality of education. Gender equality, we've actually done extremely well. As you know, there's been a report, I'll show you part of it, which was provided to the United Nations in September last year, where all countries were called to come and report about progress within development. In terms of gender equality, we've been ranked very high by United Nations. Unfortunately, female members may not agree. There's always a complaint in the country, like in the local government, that they go 50-50. But in as far as United Nations is concerned, South Africa is ranked very high. If I'm not mistaken, we are somewhere around number 3 or so in the world about our issues of gender equality. So we're doing very well. Now, the problem starts when you come to the health-related Millennium Development Goals, reducing child mortality, improving maternal health, and combating HIV/AIDS. Number 7, you know, it's a big war around the world. COP17 is going to take place here in our own country later this year about environmental sustainability. Number 8, about global partnerships. The global partnerships were working very well. They started wobbling during the global economic downturn, as you know. Many of our health programs are funded by Global Fund, USAID, PEPFAR, DC, in their own countries because of their deficit. There are already a lot of debates whether they must continue helping the developing world. It's a very welcome festival. Otherwise, that was achieved very well. Now, that is the health-related one. The goal number four is to reduce child mortality. As you know, there's a difference between child and infant mortality. Child mortality means under 5, infant means under 1 year. So, in reducing the child mortality, the effect must reduce it by 2/3. That means 66%. And maternal health, we must reduce by 3/4, means 75%. And then we must deal with HIV, AIDS, malaria, and other diseases. I can confirm, Chairperson, that as a country, we are in deep trouble on this millennium development. As a country and as a continent, we are doing really not very well. And let me not include the same continent, the whole continent. It's Sub-Saharan Africa. Sub-Saharan Africa is really struggling on these issues of millennium development growth. And I'm not suggesting we might not reach them, but there's a big struggle. When you look at number 6, the only one at least in South Africa we can pride ourselves on is malaria. We are doing very well, and we are even moving from eradication. 8 countries in Southern Africa believe if we work at this pace of 2020, we might have eradicated malaria. The biggest threat is the war internationally about the use of DDT, and that's another topic, but we're doing very well on that one. Now, Chairperson, in order to understand the Millennium Development Goals, we need to understand what we are dealing with. I think the biggest problem that happens in South Africa is that the Millennium Development Goals were adopted in 2000. We never actually went back as a country to look at exactly what it means, what does it mean, what are we dealing with. We only started recently to deal with that. That means to look at the burden of disease globally in our country. When you say you want to achieve Millennium Development Goals, what are the factors, what do you have? Now, that first slide explains it, which was only the start released in August 2009 by the Lancet. As you know, the Lancet is a prestigious British medical journal. They didn't do this study. They commissioned our own researchers to do this study. Is there any pointer somewhere that they could help? Somebody can bring me a pointer. Now, in terms of this, they say South Africa is faced with a quadruple burden of disease. We are faced with a quadruple burden, 4 times burden of disease. Other countries around the world, as you learn later this year, are worried about the NCDs, non-communicable diseases. That's why last month, a meeting was called in Moscow by the United Nations and the World Health Organization to deal with ever-increasing threat of NCDs. That is the rest of the world. In Africa, they are talking about the double burden of disease. But on top of the communicable diseases, you are now facing the non-communicable diseases, which are on the rise. But in South Africa, it's a quadruple burden. We are carrying 4 burdens. The first one is HIV/AIDS and TB burden, which are regarded as bigger than in any other country in the world. In summary, we form only 0.7% of the world population, but we are killing 17% of HIV-positive people of the world. I'll come to TB later. The second pandemic we are facing with is maternal, newborn, and child health. That means instead of them decreasing, especially maternal mortality, we are reaching crisis points in our country. The third one is the non-communicable disease, the one that the whole world is worried about. It's also believed, Chairperson, that this non-communicable disease must now form Millennium, but become part of Millennium Development Goals. In 2000, when Millennium Development Goals were adopted, they were worried about communicable diseases, especially HIV, TB, and malaria, as you see. But now, increasingly, they believe it was a plan for the world to live out the non-communicable diseases. What do you mean by non-communicable? You know, diabetes, high blood pressure, cardiac disease, chronic respiratory disease, and cancer. They are on the increase in the world. If you exclude HIV/AIDS, 60% of the world of the deaths in the world are caused by these NCDs. And the NCDs are driven by 4 factors in any part of the world. No longer like devising the developed and less developed. In any part of the world, they are driven by 4 factors. Number 1, and foremost, is smoking, which know we are doing very well in South Africa. Many countries are following us up, and they want to put more. People believe we have put more strict rules about smoking. In the Moscow conference they attended, they want to be much harder about smoking than we have. That means what we have been doing is just the beginning. In fact, many of us believe we should talk about eradicating smoking, because they believe many countries will no longer be able to carry their budget if we continue that way. That's the first problem, smoking. The second one is alcohol. And I hear already people trying to defend it. When you say we're going to ban advertising, I just want to give a note, we'll never pull back. We will fight with our ban to fight the issue of alcohol in the thing that we're going to do with smoking. There's no way that we're going to go there on these issues, because they've been identified by the world right at that high level as causing problems around nations. And the third one is diet, for which many of us in here are very guilty. Poor diet. In fact, we are going to be, I hear some commentators already saying when you interfere with those who are in any state, we are going to be in anywhere else, I can assure you. Because many of us are already believing we must put strict restrictions on diet. For instance, one of the biggest problems is salt intake. Some countries have already started, like Britain, they are already making laws to decrease salt intake in food stuff. Because I'll tell you why it's so important. After HIV/AIDS, even in the whole country, the biggest killer becomes high blood pressure. And even before it kills you, the issue of high blood pressure causing strokes and kidney failure. Now, you as members of parliament, and I'm worried because I've heard it in the assembly the other, I think that was 2009, where members were talking to me about dialysis, that were not increasing dialysis in the kidneys. People are dying, and the issue of transplant, we need to increase them. Chairperson is like insisting that we must increase mortality in the country. It's like that. In other words, you are not solving the problem. You are saying the aftermath, people are dying, please increase mortality. Now, instead of that, members of parliament must say, why do we need so many? Why do so many people need dialysis? Why do you need so many kidneys? For example, when some companies are now stealing kidneys, you know the story. It is because of high blood pressure and the driver is salt intake. And so we must come here and legislate about salt intake. Then we'll be dealing with non-communicable diseases. The last one is exercise. We also eat. So I said before, alcohol, smoking, poor diet, exercise. If these are solved, most of the budgets of health around the world and in our own country will tremendously go down if we solve those type of problems. Now, in South Africa, it's even worse. When you come to non-communicable diseases and you go to HIV/AIDS, you find the direct link. That's why it's so worrying. For instance, we know already it has been established. Cancer of the cervix of the womb is a non-communicable disease. But now in South Africa, it's driven by HIV/AIDS. In fact, in the biggest clinic, HIV/AIDS clinic in the country, Helen Joseph in Gauteng, which 10% of people who are HIV/AIDS, they did a pap smear, and they found a 50% positive pap smear test. You know what that means? It means 50% of the women who are on ARVs, who are HIV/AIDS, are now developing cancer of the cervix of the womb. Meaning they are now having two big diseases, cancer on one side, HIV on the other. We also know that people who are diabetic spend a four times chance to get TB than ordinary people. So when diabetes grows, TB also grows. But we also know that many people who are on ARVs will eventually develop diabetes. So there is that relationship between this, which in other countries don't really find it. The last one is violence and injury, which of course, in South Africa, people used to believe that is the only biggest problem. So any healthcare system or any achievement of Millennium Development Goals will depend on how we deal with this war. If we don't deal with this war, we won't be dealing with health in South Africa. We won't be dealing with Millennium Development Goals. And the problem is that we started quite late on understanding this issue. Because as I said, this study by the Lancet, done by our own researchers in South Africa, was only released in 2009. That TB, I just wanted to show you the extent of TB, which is what was called, is affecting our chairperson. it's going to be very difficult to see that line, but let me explain it. You have got 22 countries there. These 22 countries around the world are carrying 80% of the GDP of the world. In terms of absolute numbers, as you can see, South Africa is number 5. After India, China, Indonesia, and Nigeria were number 5. In terms of absolute numbers of people in GDP. But because the other countries have got huge populations, in fact, all of them, all four of them, have got populations 30 times or even 4 times the population of South Africa. So when you do infection per population, how many people are infected per 100,000? That is the test column. You can see South Africa has got 948. We become number 1 in terms of infection per population. So we are carrying the highest burden of TB. And our distant number 2 there is Zimbabwe. In terms of co-infection rate, the last column, you can see in India there is 5.3, in China 1.9, in Nigeria 3%, in Nigeria 27%, Indonesia 3%, but ours is 73. That means they're not 73%, the people who are sharing both HIV and TB, which means, in simple terms, 73% of people who got TB are actually HIV positive, meaning that they become two sides, the disease become two sides of the same coin. Now, Jefferson, I want to show you this graphically. Well, these maps were devised by one of the world's foremost leading scientists, Professor Francis Collins, is the director of the National Health Institute in the United States of America. You might remember him, or you might have forgotten him. He's the man who revolutionized the world in 2003, who headed that team that cracked the human genome. That means that we're able to develop a genetic code inside the human, the sequence of DNA in the human genome. We now know it. We can tell you who you are related to. You remember this thing was tested on Bishop Tutu and he said you are related to the Quaker and all that. That was done by Professor Francis Collins. Now, one of the words he has produced is, how big is this load of disease in this part of the world? He did a computerized study of the world and said, this, you are seeing, there is the map of the world. As you land it in pandemic, this is according to the land map, as you know the world to be. But he said, if we explore the world in terms of the HIV AIDS burden, the map of the world won't look like this. It's in other words, if you don't draw it in terms of the size and the land map, but you draw it in terms of the size of TB, the map of the world doesn't look like this. It looks like that. Africa almost swells. And as you can see, South Africa become more swollen than ever before. The Americas almost disappeared. Europe almost disappeared. And the Middle East, you can see. But, you know, if you look at this, if you look at this dot here, this is Lesotho and Swaziland. In this map, you can hardly see them. And South Africa is there at the tip. But when you throw it up onto HIV/AIDS, they become a huge country. In South Africa, that is what you are saying, and that's what one of the reasons why Millennium Development Goals in Africa, especially Sub-Saharan Africa. If you can check this map, this region, it's not mostly there in the countries above the Sahara Desert. It's not Saharan, as you can see, those countries well, but not like the ones below the Sahara, and that's what I want people to understand the Millennium Development Goals in view of this development. Now, Professor Francis Collins goes further and says, having this pattern in Africa, what are the non-communicable diseases? The NCDs, which are killing 60%, which are responsible for 60% of the deaths global, but not in Africa global. If you look at them, the Americas will suddenly appear and Europe will swell, and the Middle East will swell even more. Because here it is like blood pressure, diabetes are the highest here. And Africa is carrying it. It's not disappearing. That's why it's an add-on. It's not disappearing. Europe, of course, becomes big. But Africa is seen. But you can see our burden of non-communicable disease is not as big as our burden on HIV. Quite different. And lastly, he said, what about human resources to solve this big problem? If you draw the map of the world in terms of human resources. That is what the UN, in fact, not human resources, in terms of doctors. I want it to be an attempt because members of parliament have collected this of believing the Minister of Health is not prepared to recruit doctors from the continent. Doctors want to come and regulate the minister as a few things. This is the continent where you want us to recruit doctors. It's almost disappeared. It's us who look a little bit. South Africa, which looks a little bit there, the rest of the continent almost disappeared. Of course, Europe will be sold. That's where all the doctors come. South and North America will be sold. South America, you can see, is not as big as that and the East. Now, when we solve the wealth problem in terms of income development goals, we need to take conclusions into this. If I go out and say I'm recruiting all the doctors on the African continent, of course I'll get them. All of them want to work here. But these people disappear completely. And people will migrate southward. They won't go home if they come southward for us because we look a little bit better. So in terms of this, we are in dire straits. Of the 4 million health workers which are developed in the whole world, you can see that the biggest problem is in this continent. That in terms of the number of doctors almost disappearing, according to the studies done by Professor Francis Collins. So these are important things. Now, back to the HIV AIDS. When did we start having this problem of being so much swollen with HIV AIDS? This problem has not always been there. As you can see from this slide, by 1997, it was not as bad as that. This problem took place swiftly in 9 years, became worse in 9 years. In 1997, if you look at death, you trace the death of people in terms of age. The figure there is age from 0 to 85 years. This is where the largest number of people died in 1997. That graph is 1997. But it kept on shifting to the younger people, such that by 2005, most of the deaths were occurring there. As you can see, it's around 8 days. And this shift to younger people dying took place within a period of 9 years. It was very swift and negligent. It's not something that occurred very slowly. It just occurred very swiftly. And that's why it might have escaped many South Africans. They might not have noticed it. But it's a reality. And who is doing the dying? The problematic thing is that it's not everybody who is young who is doing the dying. The most biggest problem is that it is the women, the young women who are doing the dying. As that slide is showing. And that becomes even more problematic for Millennium Development Goals because the death of young women, especially mothers in pregnancy, is linked to the survival of children. I mean, we all know that if your mother dies immediately after birth, your survival goes down. So when we don't achieve Millennium Development Goal number 5, you put down number 4 because they are being related. Now, this slide is very problematic. It compares us with Brazil. In 2004 and after 1997 and 2004. In Brazil, this is how you will feel there by 2004, from females 15 to 64 years, which we regard as normal. In South Africa in 1997, when this problem started, in 1997, when this problem started to hide, we were here. We were more or less like Brazil, but as you can see, we're starting to walk on. By 2004, things have completely changed. A lot of death was happening here, as much as it was 35. We had many young females dying. This is childbearing years. Now, what did this happen accidentally or what? If you check the record of the Medical Research Council in 2001, when Professor Makoba was the president, he actually picked this up. And he said, something is killing young women in South Africa during childbearing age, which is not in keeping with lots of biology. He never said HIV. He just said something is killing young women in South Africa during childbearing age, which is not in keeping with lots of biology. And on what he meant is this slide is against the laws of biology in two respects. Number one, age. You don't find people dying at this age, more than at that age. That's unbiological, not for human beings, for any biological species. You expect more death at old age. That's common sense. But the second law of biology, which this is going against, is life expectancy. Females must outlive the male. It's a law of nature, Chairperson. I know you are a male. Our species is supposed to die earlier. as we see later. But now that has changed in South Africa, and the females who are dying more than any, that's very unbiological, it's in lots of nature, and it's very problematic. It affects our medical development, both advanced food, but it also affects our socio-economic problems, crime, education, teenage pregnancy, drugs and alcohol. They all become part and parcel of this scenario. And you can pick this up, Chairperson, when you pay this. I took the deputy president to help Sibanda, one of the high prevalence areas of HIV, on World AIDS Day, because I wanted him to see practically. We visited four villages. The pattern is clear. You can see this, the effect of this, or the effect of what Professor Makhoba said in 2001. You get into the family, you find 10 kids, 10, 8, or perhaps 10 kids, from the ages of 3 to 15. They are with one grain. Then she'll tell one story that these children belong to my three daughters, they are all gone, and I'm left with them. You go to the next family, you find the similar thing. In other words, you are getting targeted families or grandmother-headed families. Because if you go to the Department of Social Development, they'll tell you, we now have 1.3 million orphans, and most of them are maternal orphans. And this is that at play. When you see practically, because I don't want members of parliament to look at this just as statistics and graphs. When you go out into the families, this is playing itself out, and it has very far-reaching ramifications. Those of you who might have attended the drug summit in Durban, the young chap who spoke after the president, who is being young chap, when he started this speech, he said, this thing started when my mother died. That sentence is very pregnant with meaning. He said, my whole problem started when my mother died. Because, chairperson, when a husband, the young husband dies and he's a young woman, it's painful enough, but somehow that young woman will find a way through. But if it's a young woman who dies and leaves a young husband, that family can be closed actually. It can disappear eventually. The young husband will get disorganized. It can even go into alcohol and start abusing, becoming abusive and all that. And the children will scatter. Then will come here and solve issues of criminality and all that. Very important to me. Very important to me. Because it's a direct consequence. The issues you see out in the community, the direct consequence of what's happening there. And we need to reverse this very fast. Now, this slide actually shows why women are the ones who are suffering. If you look here, between the ages of 2 to 4, there are more males. This is male, this is female. There are no males who are HIV positive. But just when the sexual activity starts, the young girls shoot up completely. I mean, you can see the gap there. Look at the 18 to 24. Look at this gap. It's young women. So you can see from this that HIV/AIDS is a disease spread by men, but suffered by women. And that's the reality of this situation. And if you look at it, it shows intergenerational effect. Because later on in life, there are more males who are positive. So, but during sexual activities, the females who are actually suffering more and actually explain that life, explain why that graph looks like that, where you've got many young women dying. And it's one of the issues that we need to face on as a country. And then how many people with HIV is killing in our country? As you can see, these are diseases killing our people. As I mentioned, in the quadruple burden, interpersonal injury and violence, tuberculosis, road traffic accidents, they are all there. But that's HIV/AIDS. And as you can see, by far, no comparison. Even if you add all this, most of them added together won't do what HIV/AIDS is doing to our country, making it the biggest public health crisis in our country. And what keeps South Africans away from work? Daily adjusted life years. Many people will believe it's all traffic accidents and injury and violence. I'm not undermining them, but that's what they should otherwise. TB and HIV/AIDS are responsible for 25% of absenteeism from work in South Africa. If the economy is not going to work very well, it's because of that. You know, you go to the farm care person. I met AgriAid, an NGO that is raising the farm. They gave me the name of a farm in one of the provinces where there are 400 workers, and they were tested, and 70 of them tested positive. Now you ask me what's going to happen to that farm. 70% of its workforce. The Minister of Agriculture told me that no, our farm score as high as 90%. That's why we're going to need to go into the farm. So all those contribute to absenteeism from work. Road traffic accidents only contribute 3%, but the problem is dramatic. Like this train accident in Soweto, mess with it, no good. It becomes so dramatic that everybody sees it. HIV/AIDS is no longer dramatic. It is 1,000 people a day because they die silently in different hospitals. You see by the mortality, especially child mortality and all that part. You know, so it is that level of drama which makes people to try and ignore it and say and believe that we have got more problems on the road and all that, which I'm not underplaying, but I'm just showing the actual figure. Life expectancy, as I said, as you can see, has gone down compared to, for instance, three countries in Africa. What I said, which is being changed, is this. As you can see, in all these countries, females live longer than males. But in South Africa, that is being reversed. We don't know whether these studies will show improvement later on because we have put some tests, which I'll show you later. Now, the issue of maternal mortality, just how is HIV affecting maternal mortality? We know by now that 43% of pregnant women are now killed by HIV/AIDS. And this slide shows it. If women are pregnant and negative, this is the maternal mortality. It will be 84 out of 100,000 live births. But once they are positive, the maternal mortality shoots to 328,100,000, meaning HIV/AIDS actually increases maternal mortality 10 times in South Africa. That then pulls down infant mortality because then most of these women who died, some of them will have already delivered. Those women who died without testing, whose status was not known, this is their mortality, showing again that most of them must have been positive, only that they died without testing. And I've shown you this. The debates are always thinking about infant deaths in hospitals, which you see as nicest. It's actually a universal thing. The problem is, as members of parliament, as the public, you see as nicest in hospitals, but the number of still deaths is now increased to 20,000 in our country. What is right is still bad. And the number of newborns has increased to 22,000 deaths per annum, and under 5 to 25,000. What is driving this chair? Most of these children are preterm or premature. In fact, 8% of these children who die very early on will be preterm and premature. And the prematurity and the preterm is actually driven by HIV/AIDS, where you get children as young as, you know, I mean, as small as 1,000 grand, you know, or 800 grand. You know, in many hospitals, they will struggle to make it. It's a very big struggle. You need special facilities. But apart from facilities, you need specialists who are very highly trained, who are multi-ground. When I show you that map of where the doctors are, when you get so many children coming before their time, you need special care because the only special care that will affect them is in the mother's retail. But HIV take them out of that thing. Out of that thing is very easy, and it's a special problem that we're faced with. The issue of reducing infant mortality. Now, let me explain something again here, Shepard. Because I didn't put the slide here because it was not necessary to have today, but I want to bring it. We have termination of pregnancy act in 1997, because we wanted to stop breastfeed abortion. But I think we have reached a situation where many young girls in this country are using abortion as contraception. And that's one of the things we need to prevent very quickly. This is not a sin of South Africa only. It's a sin of Sub-Saharan Africa. It was picked up by the United Nations Population Development, and of course they confronted us that in Sub-Saharan Africa, when the battle against HIV is raised, there is something that we lost. That is feminine planning and contraception. Because people moved on to the issue of AIDS disease have seen called normal Facebook, and they forgot about civility. You should check our facilities. We don't talk much about civility in the whole of Saharan Africa. That has hit the subcontinent very badly in terms of teenage pregnancies, etc. So one of the things that we must develop is that we must put up civility training very seriously. We started by blaming this young girl, because my study showed me that close to 700,000 young people committed abortion. Public, in our public hospital, I'm not talking about those who did next week, because they are still being sued. We were blaming them. The stories you see in the newspapers are called 57 kids in one school, pregnant. And we said, no, it's a lot of morality and all that. But we examined it very thoroughly, and I'm convinced most of them is because there are no family planning facilities in sub-Saharan Africa. They've been defeated, and sub-Saharan Africa must bring this up. Fortunately, this matter was discussed at the meeting of ministers of health in Wilton last month, the African Union. We picked this up and said, look, this was the biggest blunder. You can find Italy into, because there was a feeling that no, if you put contraception, people won't use condoms. You know, that fear against HIV is causing this problem. But there's also cost us. Why am I mentioning it here? Because some of these children which you classify as neonatal death, children dying very early, because they are trying to commit abortion and they come and drop them in hospital. In Sicily, there was one hospital where recently there was a lot of money about infant mortality. Some of the women who appeared there were found with cytotec in their vagina. It's a big problem. I still don't know how we are going to stop it. Cytotec or mitoprostol is a drug used against ulcers. It's resistant for ulcers, but it can induce abortion. Now, many of these young people just go to the abortionist, they insert cytotec, and they usually do it. So you are at here, the act we passed in Parliament says you can't do abortion after 20 weeks. Once they realize after 20 weeks it's illegal, they go in, they insert mitoprostol or cytotec. And they say when you feel the pain, rush to the nearest hospital. And of course, the nearest hospital they go to are public, they'll never be tested. And they go there and drop a 22-week-old fetus. He dies after a few hours in child mortality. This thing usually happens in January. And we believe there's a reason why in January. When many of them discover that I need to go to school and I've got a job, I've been admitted to an FET college, etc., and I'm pregnant, I'm 22 weeks. They say this man is a prostitute. That's okay. Now, we've got a new sketch. When you move out here, you see all over all the written same abortion with a full number, past abortion, etc. Many young girls are exposed to that. No message about contraception and family planning abortion. And I'm sorry, Chairperson, I'm sure you, we are all adults. You won't regard me as being vulgar, but this is true because it's in any of what you say here. After that, figure of safe and fast abortion, or cheap abortion, as we call them, in a full number. The next figure will be about penis enlargement. You'll see them all over. And the other one will be about strong erection. So we are living in a country where we are feeding our children a diet about abortion, a diet about deep penis, and a diet about strong erection. And many of them, that's the only message they got since they were born. There's no other message contesting from us adults, from anybody. That is the part which the Department of Health wants to reverse. And one of the reversals is a strong family planning message about this issue. They need to come back to our everyday lives. We need to stop this issue of abortion and dropping babies. And we will need to work with security forces, because those who do this speak up. Are not doctors. They write there, doctors so and so. I can assure you they are not doctors. The MEC for Health tried and seen cases and detected it. He hired people to remove these stickers. They asked the municipalities to put cameras there. And they called the people who were putting the stickers. It was young boys who are unemployed. And they took the MEC to the kingpins who were arrested. But they just moved from there to the municipality. So we need to do this universal in the whole country. It's one of the battles that we are playing, because and unfortunately for us, mitoprostol is even treated by real doctors in surgery. It just means that you can let the patient pay and say go. is a scourge which we will have to find a way to stop it. That increases this. Now, the Millennium Development Goals Chapter, this is what we imported to New York in September. As you can see, the science that is not doing very well. I showed you the slide when our problem started. Remember the slide about 1997? It shows that by 1998, these were the children who were dying 1,000 in the first year of Abiy's policy. But by 2001, it has shot that to that level. By 2007, it has actually doubled. In terms of the Millennium Development Goals, by 2016, it should supposed to be here. But we are going in the opposite direction for all the reasons I've given. Maternal mortality, same thing. Even though chairperson, I must warn you, especially with this one, the number of experts increasingly believe the figure being put for maternal mortality are too high. Some experts believe the figure is somewhere around 400, not 600. 100,000 is less. But even if it reduced to 400, it's still high for me. Still too high. So we have put together a team of experts under the World Health Organization who have been waiting around the clock, statisticians, they are waiting around the clock to revise the mortality in South Africa. And they've already done a lot of work under the auspices of the United Nations, the World Health Organization, UNICEF, United Nations Population Development, and our own universities here. They believe somewhere in the calculation, South Africa has actually received. Part of the reason being the data. We don't have good data. Because we get our data from too many different sources. And the fact that some women prefer to deliver at home and living without data at all, so that the issue of maternal mortality becomes a problem. But the experts said they'll help us, as they did in most parts of the world, and we'll reach a figure that is more than universally accepted, and we'll announce that as soon as they finish. Now, faced with this problem, we in the Department of Health, signed these four outputs with the president. The four identified outputs is that we need to increase the life expectancy. We need to decrease maternal and child mortality. Millennium Development Goals, we need to combat HIV AIDS, but we also need to strengthen the health system effectiveness. We accept fully that the health system in the country is not as effective as it should be, particularly in the public health sector. You know the problem that we are faced with there. And that doesn't mean the private sector is very effective. It's not. And I'll try to show you later. So the whole healthcare system, we need to improve its effectiveness. That means in both public and health. The public sector will be good on the curative level. That you are seeing, you go there, they cure you. But in terms of health output, they are definitely not effective at all. So the plan, what is our plan then? What we think the Millennium Development Goals. There are many plans to deal with this, but the overall is the re-engineering of the healthcare system. Why should the healthcare system in South Africa be re-engineered? It's because the healthcare system is characterized by four negatives, whether it's practice or private. Let's put together. There are four clear negatives. Number one is unsustainable. Number two, it is very destructive. Number three, it's very costly, extremely costly. And I want to repeat that, extremely costly. And number four is cost-centric, it's innovative. No health system can meet Millennium Development Goals if it's doing like that. If you are curative, meaning we don't put emphasis on stopping things from happening, we put emphasis on solving things that have already happened. That type of health system doesn't work anywhere in the world. We need to re-engineer it. Now, in re-engineering it, this is what the healthcare system looks like. This is what it looks like in our country. Primary health care happens at community level and in the clinics, but it's very small in South Africa, despite the fact that in 1994 we said primary health care will do our money. What is big in South Africa becomes tertiary and quaternary services. I gave you an example when I started this meeting. Instead of reducing health intake, exercise, height, to reduce the high blood pressure, kidney failure, the number of kidneys that are wanted, and dialysis, we go and attack them. Say, no, increase the dialysis units in the hospitals, in the public sector, increase, get more kidneys, go and steal them if they are not enough. That's a very destructive healthcare system. we need to start there. Even the medical is red like that. Fortunately, I've told the Council of Medical Schemes and the Board of Healthcare Partners that even medical schemes, what they are doing, doesn't make sense at all. I mean, let me give you a simple example. I've showed you what the issue of pregnancy, abortion is doing. If a young person goes to medical aid and says, I want to start feminine claiming contraception, the medical aid will tell them, no, we don't supply such things, we're wasting our time. She'll go and tell pregnant and see that post a same thing abortion. She'll go in desperately, try to forego an abortion, end up with a safety abortion. Then she'll go to hospital, get admitted there, in the ICU, the bill is 100,000 rand, then the medical aid is ready to pay. And they are very ready to pay. They'll pay for that free, ready. But contraception, which may cost 1,000 times less, they will never pay for it. That's why in some parts of the world, even here, the medical aid is covering because they've seen that. They are very worried. They can actually pay for their member to go for to the gym. Other medical aid will be very stupid. To pay for you to go and exercise, they won't pay. They'll wait for you to get high blood pressure or diabetes and put you on treatment. Or they'll wait for you to need a renal dialysis at 4,000 rand a day or a dialysis. Or they're likely to get new kidneys. But if they have to pay for prevention, they refuse. That is what is making South African healthcare system. Not that in the public sector was doing very well either, in terms of immunization, breastfeeding, stopping alcohol, stopping smoking, and all that. Those are primary healthcare things that will reduce the need there. So a normal healthcare system must look like this. Most of the things must happen here. Some of the congestion in hospital is because of this check. People wake up to go there. I saw this during the strike because I went to Chris Ali Barabana Hospital. I was shocked. Many people who just wake up in Soweto and go to Chris Ali Barabana Hospital. Everybody wants to go there. That's a teacher institution. People need to be studying here. So if it is us who did not provide this, we are certainly going to strengthen this. And during my budget speech, I'll expand on this later on. How we're going to engineer the healthcare system to make sure that this happens. The majority of people in South Africa, their healthcare problems can be dealt with. So that only a very few must go to that level. Now, HIV. Our universal approach to HIV was announced by the President on Wednesday day. And these are the treatment options as mentioned. The cigarette targeted pregnant women, and I gave you the reasons earlier was that we must treat them when the disease comes in stages. We also targeted TB co-infected people. I showed you the slide of TB co-infection in South Africa, how it is. We also targeted prevention of mother to child transmission that we must start at 14 weeks or 28. But we also targeted newborn children. 70,000 children are born HIV positive every day in South Africa. Chairperson, this figure is a bit significant because our scientists have proven that a child who's born HIV positive, the chances of dying in the first 6 months of life increases by 1,500% percentage point, meaning HIV AIDS causes death to increase 15 times in HIV positive children than normal children. And there are 70,000 of them who have got that chance of dying in the first 6 months. And this is it. It is a big problem for us. Now, while we're putting them on treatment, we believe we can stop this by that. If every pregnant woman in South Africa can go to our antenatal clinic by 14 weeks and be put on a PMTCT. Now, you don't achieve this in hospital. As many people want to believe. It will never happen in hospital. It happens at primary health care level in the community. That's why the re-engineering to primary health care is so important. If you start at teacher hospital institutions that we're doing, too late, or if we believe doctors must be able to do miracles inside the hospital, it's too late. The miracles must happen inside the community. And I'll tell you, I'm going to demonstrate later why this should happen, or this should be like that. Then the issues of prevention. These are our 9 prevention strategies, as you know them. I've shown them to you many times. One of them is the HCC counseling method, which we said will test 15 million South Africans for HIV AIDS. a control test for kidney, a high blood pressure and diabetes. This is the main thing. That one is the use of condoms, you know it. But these are mine methods. The newly found one is medical practitioner, which has proved to be very useful also. The global fund has actually been affording me 2 million rand to do it. And we are happy that it's progressing very well. KwaZulu-Natal is ahead, many problems in medical transition. And the issue of prevention of malady child transmission, this we can achieve if we work together from communities right across the planet. But out of these chapters, the only one which South Africa has achieved with flying colors is this one, free blood transfusion. Because together with PEPFAR, the American fund, we put a date of the ultra-treaty at 24, I can assure you. Getting HIV AIDS from blood transfusion in our hospital, public or private, is going to be a mere accident, if at all you get it. It will be one in a million, yeah. So this one we have achieved. We are battling to achieve the other 8, and we are working very hard to try and achieve them. Now, to target Millennium Development Number, goal number 4, we need to increase the percentage of children under 1 year of age who are fully immunized. We need to conduct measles and polio campaigns in all provinces. We have done so already. As you know, last year we have immunized 90% of 50 million children against measles. More than 90% against polio. We need to maintain that. And we want to add universal immunization for pneumococcal and rotavirus that causes diarrhea. But you know very well that if South Africa achieves universal coverage in terms of clean running water, then there won't be any need for immunization for the virus. But for now, as long as we some communities don't have clean running water, we will have this problem. And the issue of, yes, we also need, I've already spoken about PMTCT, I've already started about antiretroviral treatment, and we need to increase the proportion of HIV positive children who are on top cotrimoxazine, which prevent them from diseases that are opportunistic, maternal health. We need to increase the proportion of health facilities providing basic antenatal care. We need to increase the percentage. Basic antenatal care is primary health care. And the distraction here is being caused by technology. Many mothers will collect money, go to a private doctor to go and do an ultrasound to see the effects of the child, and get very excited and not care about the other antenatal care issues that will stop children deaths and all that. That is a special problem caused by technology and what you call the commercial medicine. Increasing the percentage of mothers and babies who receive postnatal care within 6 days of their life, and increasing the percentage of eligible HIV pregnant women who are placed on highly effective antiretroviral therapy. And this part, increasing the proportion of these natal facilities providing choice of termination of pregnancy. To stop this abortion. I've already told you about the mainstay here is the issue of family planning. It's a pity. That sentence, actually, I am in support of it. It's only that family planning. I work very hard to reduce it. We don't need to go in this direction. And the issue of combating HIV is malaria. I think I've already spoken a lot. The new thing that I'm putting there, these others have already spoken about it. INH therapy. We are targeting 600,000 people with INH. If your co-infection rate is that high, it means the moment you are HIV positive, the chance of getting TB are very high. So isoniazid preventative therapy for those people who are HIV positive to stop them from getting TB rather than waiting for them to get TB and try to treat. Now TB check. On the 24th of March this year, we adopted a three-pronged approach, which I announced on World TB Day, or I launched on World TB Day. A three-pronged approach to approach TB in the country. Number one, is the gene expert technology. I'm sure you might have heard about. And number two is the 5-symptom disease. And number five is the high-tech MDR hospital using designated technology from the CSIR, Center for Scientific and Industrial Research, in Pretoria. These strategies were already implemented and they are already bearing fruit. We believe if we continue this way, our chance of fighting and eradicating TB are very high. What is meant by gene expert technology? For the past 50 years, there was developing a new diagnosis for TB. Anywhere in the world, the method we're using to diagnose TB has been invented 50 years ago. While the other diseases were advancing with new technology, TB was not. And the World Health Organization got very worried. They put together a team of scientists in 2005 to work around the clock, and they came up with this gene-expert technology. It's a technology rather than a device that has revolutionized the diagnosis of TB. Ordinarily, when you've got TB, apart from taking X-ray, we take your hospital chest as you know. We send it to the laboratory. We can get the results after a week. Sometimes even after 4 weeks, depending on the route and which part of the country comes from. But with gene expert technology, we can know the results in 2 hours. You don't have to go home, we take your hospital and say, wait here. In 2 hours, we'll tell you the diagnosis. And we can pick up 98% of the people who have got TB. Whereas with the old method, we could only pick 66%. And we're forced to do other tests like heart, you know, with microscope, you pick 66%. In expert, we can pick 98%. That is tremendous improvement. But the second thing is, with gene expert, before gene expert technology, after we diagnose you, maybe after 1 week or 4 weeks, we then start you on treatment. After 3 months, if you don't respond, we then start thinking that you've got multi-drug resistant TB. That is after 3 months. And they say in the life of a TB patient, that patient will affect 15 other human beings if nothing is done urgently. Now, in the past, we'll treat it after you've got multi-drug resistant TB after 3 months of treatment. But with gene expert, in the very same 2 hours that we diagnose you, we can tell you that you are recovering resistance. Recovering resistance is a proxy for multi-drug resistant TB. So we already know that, and we can start treating you like a multi-drug resistant. That's a revolution. So we've got 3 types of gene expert technology. The first one is called gene expert 48. It means it can do 48 tests at a time. In a period of 8 hours, it can do 200 tests. We've got only one, which is at Prince Michigan Hospital. The reason that we choose there, that's the highest prevalence of TB in the country. There are 45,000 people who were detected creating TB in a TB municipality. That's why we put this team expert in Prince Michigan Hospital. That technology, Chairperson, we're very proud to say that it's the only one in the continent of Africa that gene expert fully in, whether in public and private. It's the only one of 5 outside the United States. That means the other 4 ones in the United States, I mean in Europe, some in Canada. Out of the United States, there are only 5 gene experts, and one of them is with us. And the one we're getting is the only one that is dedicated to TB. The other has been something else, but this one is for TB. We also have gene expert 16. That can be to 16 tests at a time. We have delivered it to every province in South Africa. Every province has got a high burden district. In KwaZulu-Natal, the high burden district is it's a clinic. In Western Cape, the high burden district is the Cape Metro. So each one of the high burden districts has got gene expert 16. And the gene expert 24 that can do. No, the other way. Gene expert 16 is here, gene expert 24 is here. So the gene expert 24 is the one that can do 24 tests. It's one in district. The gene expert 16 can do lesser tests. And the gene expert 8, why am I making such terrible mistake? 8 tests at a time, change this figure, please. We have delivered up to 20 healthcare institutions. Our aim, Chairperson, is that in the next 18 months, we will roll out this gene expert technology to all healthcare institutions. The World Health Organization has helped us, USAID has funded us tremendously. We're very happy to have been chosen as a country where this technology is rolled out in Africa. On March 27th, the executive director of FIND, which is the organization that was established by the World Health Organization to come up with this technology, Foundation for Innovation of New Technologies, the CEO was here when we unveiled this technology, and we are very proud of it. What has the technology done, Chairperson? Ordinarily, when we use microscopy, even when we do TB contact, we pick up between 1 and 10%. But now, since March 21st, we are picking up 18% contact, meaning that before these experts were, our TB load was actually underrated, much more than that, and the gene expert is picking it. Now, the five food family visits. From February, Chairperson, we put up teams of five people headed by a senior professional nurse with one HIV counselor and three primary and care workers who visit families. In our database in South Africa, 407,000 families and for people with TB inside them. Now, in our hospital system, we wait for this TB person to come to hospital. Those who are contacted, so we want to know. In this method, we visit each one of these families, and we started in February. By March 24th, well, TB day, we've already visited 18,000 families. I've just checked this morning. We have now reached 45,000 families. Moving on. We go there with this expert technology, and we try to treat the conduct. And let me tell you what this thing has revealed, apart from TB, showing what primary care is possible. Just in England only, when this team visited, they found 1.5 million who are pregnant. They have never gone to any antenatal care, which means we don't know what they are carrying. Just pregnant and feeding at home. They are likely to go to hospital to deliver. And then that's when you start finding a crisis. Those babies die, maybe all of them in the first day or in the first week, and it becomes a crisis nationally. That's so many babies die. Because you don't know whether they are HIV positive, whether, you know, but those children were found. What is even more scary was that 35 children were found who were 5 years or older, who have never been immunized for anything. Because maybe some of them are in informal treatment, they are just born there, they never go to hospital. They are not even registered with anybody, not even with home affairs, and we discover them there. So these home visits are very important, and we are going to keep on going for the home visits. And our engineering of the primary care will put emphasis on going into the house rather than going into the hospital. So that's what the five team is doing to us. And our hope is by well CB day, at least half of these families should have been completed, should have been visited, and should have stayed. Who has got TB from the member of the family who has contracted TB. And the last is the MDR hospital. Global Fund has given us money. Each province has now got a high-tech hospital for MDR. How does it differ from an ordinary hospital? The CSIR technology is such that the ventilation, the mechanical ventilation and the arrangement there reduces the chances of nurses contracting TB. We've got quite a number of nurses in South Africa who contract TB for patients, and many health workers are scared. But if you move the MDR patients to this special hospital, the manner in which the design is reduces the rate of infection, especially for the health workers, because those patients there is like in a 5-star hotel where each one of them, those who are highly infected, have their own room with their own ablution facilities, their own insults and all that. So as to stop the rate of infection, it's quite expensive. Quite expensive, but we have to do it, and they must stay there for 18 months. So the biggest success is family visits, not the gene expert, even if the evolution and the MDR TB, because both of them show say that the biggest success is to stop TB from happening, and that's what we'll be doing. Chairperson, problems with the MDGs in South Africa is this. Considerable improvement, but still under registration and reporting delay of 2 years. That means to get data. Registered surveillance system provides 86 details of deaths of people on the National Population Register. And the census 2001-2011 includes direct questions on deaths in the household. So we try to improve because we've got a problem of data. Now, these are the projected models of collecting our data, and our data is collected from this. That's why it's so complex. It's in critical estimates from all the actuarial societies of South Africa, many other, you know, studies. so that's why we are putting international teams together so that agree on what actually is our data in the country. Thank you, Chair.
So thank you very much, Senator. Members, I'm sure we've learned a lot about what's going on in health, and I'm sure we're going to be asking a lot of questions. But I think what is coming up very clearly is that it seems as if we started a little bit late into concentrating on this thing. There's no doubt about that. And the level, the challenges are in the level of knowledge of our people. Obviously, I'm talking about primary healthcare. This is the level of knowledge. And the other area which comes up very clearly is that with poverty in South Africa, which probably might not be residing with the Department of Health, has got a very big impact. Because if you look at your HIV, even your infant mortality without HIV, even the death of maternal life, the mother, is definitely related to the poverty and the infections. Just like the diabetes and the TB, it's actually the immune system that is involved. The other area which is very important, which we think the development has done well in looking at the private sector, is what is driving us as communities. Are we being driven by money and profit over our communities? I think it's something that they talk about, but that's why that needs a few regulations. When you are talking about dialysis, I was looking at regulating even the traditional healers and the practitioners that you are getting. Because even then, they contribute towards those patients with the renal failure. But it seems as if we definitely need some regulations of the system so that people are not only treated by profit, but they should have a similar framework. Remember, this is the report. But it looks like we've got 5 years to the targeted time. But what we're getting is that probably it's here or there whether we're going to be able to achieve. But I'm going to give over you. Welcome, Member Sister. Sorry that we started here. Okay, I see Memore. I see Sami.
Thank you. Yeah, I think you have just made me nervous tomorrow. Okay, thank you very much, Captain. Minister, we really appreciate the report. Sitting here when you were tweeting, I was really becoming very excited. But what you have just said, it has been my problem since I sit in this committee, primarily UK. And it has really shown with those three main goals, which are health related, if we get our primary health care right, it means that we are going to really achieve. When in slide 10, Minister, when you talk about number of doctors being a problem, I ask myself, what about nurses? Because when we go to our oversight, wherever we go, there is a problem with shortage of nurses. And I would even say that when we are having even shortage of doctors, which we know, when the new dispensation comes to court, among other things which the department did, it was to train nurses on diploma in clinical assessment, diagnosis, treatment, and care. What we normally call it primary health care. And I think we even went to an extent to train nurses on advanced midwifery and pediatric, diploma in pediatric. But I have seen the oomph which is started because it's no more there. because the problem is with these nurses who are being specialists on those diplomas I just mentioned, they become targets of easily recruited. You find that where we were in 1995 is now less because most of them they have gone. Now I will really want to know where are we in training our nurses so that they can be able to deal with those goals. Another thing, the clinics and health centers are being revitalized, but mostly in the building. You find that the essential equipment package is not there in the clinic. You find that, like I've already talked about nurses, it's not there. Therefore, I really want us to assess where we are. Like we are assessing the Millennium Development Goals. I want to see ourselves assessing where we are to see the primary health care where we want. Are we really winning? Are we going there? The last thing, the last but one, is one should want to know, like in slide 24, not slide 24, whereby the minister talks about the Gen X factor. The other one we know where it is, but the 24 and the 16, one would know so that when we do our own visit to our district, we really go to see the difference where this Gen X 24 and 16 is.
I apologize for that. I'm sure that we're speaking
okay
about the Gen X 16.
All right.
But supposed to be student thing.
Okay, all right. Then the last one. When I was a nurse, when we started, when I was in charge of Fatima Clinic in Northwest, we used to have home visits, whereby the sister, the assistant nurse, and the home, the health promotion in the afternoon when the clinic is not busy, will be going to the village to do home visits. But now, those things don't happen because of shortage. Can we see the health promotion really coming up? Thank you,
Chair. Thank you very much. I'm hoping that you just jot them down so that you respond to all of that. I think this element of primary health care, it brings another point of the higher, what I would say, higher health level, the tertiary care level and the primary. I mean, there's been a suggestion, in fact, I agree with that suggestion, but why don't we allow the provinces where most of the work is done to concentrate on primary health care and the tertiary institutions become national and they get controlled by you so that those professors can report directly to you. But it's something that we need to probably to discuss. Oh, by the way, we've got to have questions, Minister. And after the question, we'll just have a short break. And after that, we can respond. Okay, Sammy?
So man's not easier than Cheryl and I know, so tongue twister. But if you're going to shorten it, we're saying it's safe to share, perhaps, for a bit. Honourable Minister, when we were looking at page 7 on our current reality of premature deaths, you mentioned we could be having 1,000 people a day dying. Is that a realistic estimate? Is that the kind of figure that people are talking about? On page 7, I want to applaud you for your understanding and insight of those issues around strict determination of pregnancy, misoprostol in particular, and all of the added issues. It was in 2004 that I sat in a health portfolio committee meeting here where the DG told us that that misoprostol was going to be the department's new policy, and I think they referred to it as something like non-surgical abortion. So it has been very worrying and very concerning. And there's a lot of issues around it that I've had feedback from doctors in terms of how it's negatively impacting on deaths of women in terms of, because of this happening, other women are not able to go into some crisis situation with the pregnancy. There is no sort of surgery available for them and whatever. So there's a lot of things that we need to look at there. Do you intend looking at this? Because what you said, obviously, that the family planning aspect has dropped away, and that's important. Can we understand that? But promoting abortion on demand continually undermines all of the efforts that people are making, because that's the clear message that's been so solidly and forcefully promoted up for now. People have clearly got that in their thinking, young people particularly, because they've known nothing else in their time. And hearing you obviously sensing that there are issues around this, can we not really make a determined effort to look at how these negative things that are impacting our society? Because ignoring it, we've ignored so much up till now, and ignoring it further, it's just going to delay any turnaround. But I thank you for it. The medical aid, you said, we're not supplying contraceptives. Is that something we can do something about? is there some way that, it seems very strange to me. And also, what is the public, what are the clinics doing? Are they providing the contraceptives? I should imagine that you're talking in terms of pills, monthly prescriptions and things like that, because that's what obviously people are going to do whatever they find is easiest for them. And then just, I think lastly, compulsory testing. You're doing an amazing thing in terms of the encouraging people to get counseling and testing. Have we really considered how we could turn compulsory testing into something that really is a positive and that could work for us? Because I know everybody always wants to bring up this, if there's a stigma attached, but if everybody has to test, but surely that stigma is going to drop away, because it becomes our normal, natural duty, civic duty, to go and be tested however often. And those sort of things can be checked up on, like, for example, you have to present, like for a TV, you have to present whatever the license before you can buy one. You have to present a certificate of certain places before you get whatever services. And it just becomes a norm. If it becomes a norm for everybody, surely that's going to deal with some of the stigma issues that are attached there. And I just feel that it's worth looking into. Not more, but I'm sure everybody else would like it turned first. We can come back to that.
Let me say another little question now. Let me not just say. But I think this is very important. But I think what the minister was trying to do, I'm not trying to protect him, but we as public figures, we are the ones who are supposed to assist in making people understand the importance of family planning, even beyond talking about whether you use contraceptives or use this. But these are the things that we need to talk about ourselves as public representatives. Okay, Mike, let me say honorable Walters, not Mike. I've seen you honorable
Mike. Thank you, Minister, for the presentation. First of all, I'd like to compliment you on the health without lifestyle approach that you want South Africans to take. I think it's high time that we educate South Africans regarding the dangers of smoking, bad eating, and drinking. And as you know, I lost my mom to smoking last year. The stroke and smoke. So it's something very close to my heart, and it's something that we need to promote a lot more throughout the country. Then just on the issue of 5/10, the issue of the doctors and lack of human health professionals in general. I mean, as a committee, and the chair will bear me out here, we have asked the department for their detailed plan on human resources about 4 months ago. Right, and I know Greer has repeatedly phoned the department up, and I know Joe has tried as well. And what we wanted from the department was the specific target since the human resources plan was launched several years ago. As far as every health profession was concerned, to date we haven't achieved that. And the only conclusion I can have, Minister, is that there is no plan, no concrete, no specific plan with set targets. By the end of this year, we want to start producing X amount of more doctors or nurses or pharmacists. And I think although there's many factors why we don't have enough doctors and nurses and pharmacists in the country, I think we've contributed to that, the crisis ourselves, by not planning and having that foresight in planning. So I just want to get your take on that, and also, will the new revised human resources plan have set targets, and when will we see that plan? When will it be made public? Thanks. And then just on the next page, page 6, slides 11 and 12, it's very grim and depressing reading about the number of people dying from HIV and the ages in which they die. And the fact that the fact that women are dying a lot quicker and earlier than men goes against nature. But have you done any research into what effect the decade of denialism had on the impact and the spread of HIV in our country and the consequences of that right now?
I mean,
have you conducted any research into the impact, negative impact, that the decade of denialism regarding HIV/AIDS had on our country? And if so, what does that research tell you? Then, just tongue-in-cheek, on page 12, on slide 34, talks about the re-engineering of the health system. But I was hoping we were going to hear a lot more on the national health insurance. It wasn't mentioned once at all. So I was just wondering what's happened to that policy now. But anyway. And then lastly, Chair, on the specific goals with regards to maternal and child mortality on pages 16 and 17, there's no specific target. It talks about, for example, strengthening the prevention of mother-to-child transmission program. But how are we going to strengthen that? There's no specifics that are given to the committee. It's just general, broad strokes. And so I would have liked to have seen more specifics. Increasing the number of new child patients initiated an ARV therapy from what to what, by when. We'd like to see those targets so we as a committee can hold the department to account. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Minister, for the presentation. It's actually so heartening when you actually realize that a lot of socioeconomic factors impact on our health care. And issues like poverty, as long as people are intolerant in the ways or in the manner they are now, it actually impacts on health. Whatever plan you put in place, there will always be something like that happening. Minister, I just want to ask you if there's any research that has been done in terms of grants, because you actually enlightened us on a lot of issues that impact on infant, child, and maternal mortality issues. And the issue of social grants as well, not that we need to stop it, but to say a lot of people are even second, third, fourth bonds to try and increase their income, and along the lines, a lot of mistakes happen, and you find that, some of the babies are not, born, they die, and all of that. Has any research been done in terms of the impact, or maybe any legislation suggestions to say, maybe the government can change and say, if you have the first child, then you get it, and the second child, downwards, you have to see to finish, because now people are using the grant to have children, and this impact on health a lot. And then the issue of family planning, actually family planning needs to be strengthened, I agree with you. Family planning has always been there, but the problem is at some stage of the staff attitude. A lot of people were complaining about staff attitude at family planning facilities, so I think that needs to be strengthened. And my biggest problem is actually translating everything that is spoken to in your presentation in terms of the plan, the re-engineering.
because I'm having a problem where we always have this, you know, a nice plan that we never implement or nobody monitors or evaluates. For instance, during the during March, the 29th to the 31st, we did oversight as a committee in Gauteng province. And at Lerato Hospital specifically, there was neonatal ICU, there was no isolation cubicle, you know, or room. They were using a certain corner in the same ICU room, a certain corner, as an isolation area if they had a highly infectious neonate. So, I mean, if we're still talking about, you know, reaching the millennium development goals, and still practically at the ground, things are not happening the way they're supposed to happen. And I think they had this problem for over a year, and nothing was done. And questions were asked, don't you have, you know, your infrastructure budget and all that, why couldn't a room be, you know, built or something like that. So my only problem is that how are we going to translate the plan practically down there to ensure that such things, you know, do not happen so that we can meet or to some extent meet the MTGs. And how, I mean, to me, to some extent, issues of holding people, you know, accountable. How are we going to ensure that we do that on a very strict basis? Because to some extent, as much as the problem is in the communities, the problem is also within the institutions themselves. But I must say, I'm very pleased with your approach of actually going out there and not waiting for people to come into the hospital, which in my view, I always hope that we would do primary health care vascularization before we do the tertiary services, you know, academic hospital vascularization, because like you said, if we work on a curative basis, then we're not actually doing anything, because then we wait for people to come to hospitals or to come to primary health care facilities. So, and then the other question is to say, as already we know that the hospital vascularization has started, and we cannot, for some reason, stop it. Is there any chance that at some stage we see the overhauling of what we call primary health care revitalization starting? Because for me, I still see the department prioritizing hospital revitalization still more than, you know, a primary health care revitalization. Thank you.
One more, you're going to be the next one, but just to make a comment. I just think that I think as you can hear, most of the people are very pleased with our passion. And even the re-engineering, I mean, looking at the documents previously, we noticed that we have been going on like in one way, but it seems that this now there's a change, there's a new strategy that has come, which are very basic, but the people are concerned about, is this going to work? And the analysis is actually on the provinces, because they're the ones who are doing this. Interestingly, we've done visits to the provinces, but the interesting thing is that in all the provinces that we've gone to, we've not managed to get the political heads to explain to us some of the things that are happening in their provinces. They'll always give reasons, no, we are dealing somewhere else. But they are the people, in fact, it would be very nice if they would have the same passion that we have of what we are doing in health. But that is something that you don't have to answer to that. On this one of the pregnancies and the grant, I think we once called HST, the health system, to talk to us. What they said to us, I'm sure members will remember, they said when they looked at it, there didn't seem to be a very clear correlation between the money that they're getting and the pregnancy. That's what they said to us, but maybe we can go back and look at it. That's what they said. It's just the health system. Okay, Martin.
Okay, thank you very much. And thanks for the presentation. I am interested in the 15 families basis. It's a very good idea, but is there enough manpower to be able to do that, particularly making use of the health promotion people? I am told that Walter Sisulu is training health promoters. I wonder if the department is familiar with that. And community development workers, are they also going to be used towards that because they are more close to the people? If Minister were given an extension beyond 2014 of the Millennium Development Goals, where do you think would almost be closer to reaching some of them? Around the issue of health promotion as well, and if there could be more advent on healthy lifestyle than the advent, the 1,000 adverts we see on alcohol, the 1,000 adverts we see on many other things that are really not health promoting. When we begin to address the issue of healthy lifestyle or non-communicable diseases aggressively. HIV and malaria, to what extent is the vulnerability of persons with HIV with malaria as well? And then finally, it was going to talk about male circumcision and also talk about condoms, male condoms. It was pleasing but not pleasing that female condoms still are being raised to a higher number, farther than male condoms. And that negotiation of condom use is really very significant. What's the take on
this, Minister? Thank you very much. I think
Minister, I'm not sure whether I should say about female condoms that are negotiated. Honorable member,
what I'm saying, Chair, in most cases, in particular, if you were to go rural, the 4-4 cases and whatever, females at most times have got to negotiate. Can you use a condom? And you find that there's a bit deep around that. So if females can have condoms and you know they feel that is that possible to raise the number of female condoms? But let alone the other stories you've heard about female condoms.
Thank you,
Mabi.
You got that one there. Okay. So I'm not sure what the member said, so you wanted to ask something, but if not, you don't have to ask.
I didn't say more than what I was told there.
Thank you. Okay. You should have waited for me to punish you not to allow me to ask that. Okay, thank you. Those are the questions, Minister. I think Mother said something about that. Most of these departments will not do what they're supposed to do, and they end up with cancer. I don't think it's only a few things. Everything that goes wrong in the world, when things have gone bad, the next thing is death, and the death usually happens in hospital. So everything that goes wrong ends up with cancer. So I think we'll just leave it at that. Let's go and have tea, and then we come back and minister your response. For 10 minutes. That's for 10 minutes. No smoking. Let me just make the shuttle down. Yeah, you can close that door. Right. Thank you. Okay. I'll give over to the Minister to respond to the question. Okay, Minister.
Yes, the first question, the chairperson about the shortage of nurses. Yes. It's a pity I emphasize on doctors, specifically because I wanted to show you the map by Professor Cody, because he did it on doctors, not on nurses. But you might not have noticed I added that the said health workers, that includes nurses, doctors around the world, the shortage is about 4 million. And most obviously in sub-Saharan Africa. But you are aware that in South Africa, in trying to detect this problem and solve it universally, not piecemeal, we called a youth nursing summit, which was there for the whole 3 days, if you remember that nursing summit. His peers have been looked at very thoroughly. They are past him set. I know Chairperson, you repeatedly mentioned the issue of implementation and will accept. That sometimes we pass for it without implementation, but if you look at what we have done on the Nation Summit, it culminated into a Nation Compact. Last week during the International Nation Day, we put that compact in all the newspapers. What was agreed on in the summit? It is divided into issues of training, standards of care, the Nurses Pledge, the change of uniforms, which you know, the fact that strikes in the nursing profession have got negative impact. All those were discussed for that number of days, because the biggest problem here is the issue of the training of nurses. That is what caused us the problem. People believe it started in 1994. It started far beyond that. I remember as a doctor, I'm one of the people who were worried. When a decision was taken in 1986, that the basic platform of training of nurses is at university is no longer inside the hospital. And it's, now you've got a mixture of things. Some nurses are trained at university, others are at nursing colleges, which are away from hospitals, others inside the hospitals. You know, so the summit was going to correct all those things, and they've come up with some solutions. We are going to put up task teams, you know. We have even agreed to establish a special desk in the National Department for Nursing. It was never there, you know, a special desk for the nursing officer, who is responsible for all the nursing problems. And we are going to put it inside the organogram, you know, and there. But that task team of nurses is already established. We are going to make sure that we implement the agreement as we wish. As it appears on the nursing compact. The issue of essential equipment, yes, that is very true. Let me tell you why one of our problems. In South Africa, we don't have norms and standards. They are not existing anywhere on what equipment you need at what level of health care. It's a matter of hit and run. And it's very problematic. You know, actually, we overdo things. The chest that we're asking whether we are not practicing money here as a health check. And then, you know, it's a very important question. And to me, I thought I'm able to show you this. Yes. If you look at that map, it actually shows you. And people are trying to deny this thing. This map shows the health output versus the cost of health care. If you look at it, you see, when you move this way, you spend more money on health. When you move that way, your performance on health increases. Now, here in South Africa, what it means is all these countries to the left and above. That is, if you check there, Colombia, Turkey, Mexico, China, Chile, Algeria, Taiwan, Russia, Philippines, Brazil, Uruguay, Slovakia, Poland, Saudi Arabia, Oman, Kuwait, and Bahrain up there. All those are spending less money in health, but they've got a higher output than South Africa. One other country in the world which is in big trouble, and people don't understand the dilemma in which Obama is America. Look where they are. In terms of expenditure, they are at the end of the world. This is how much money they spend on health. But all these countries here have got better outcomes than America. Much better. Netherlands, Germany, New Zealand, Spain, Czech Republic, UK, France, Switzerland, all of them. They spend far less than they can't go anywhere near. But the outcomes are in Africa, it is as here. Now we need to think about these issues. Some of them is equipment. You just buy very high quality equipment. For instance, the magnetic resonance imaging. You're not supposed to find that in every hospital, even in private hospitals. You're not. But they put them all over. And people get maybe that no, this machine is all over. You have to pay for this presentation. There's no question about it. It must pay for itself, it must pay the installment. So what will doctors do? They will order tests which you don't need. That is why former chairperson of the Human Rights Commission, Judy Collard, confronted me. He was doing a study as the chairman of the Human Rights Commission. on accessibility of health in South Africa. And he came across this information that in South Africa, an average metric last person on a medical aid, when you are sick, you are more overseas than your counterpart in the UK. In other words, in this very poor part of the world, we do more tests than they do in the UK. Because you must pay for all these machines. You must pay for all the specialists, you must pay for all the type of things. So you end up having more money. Same thing in America. So that's why you need to move over to primary health care. And I give you another example. Why should very poor people fight to go and get an ultrasound and get the sex of the baby before birth? That becomes the instinct. And in that process, we rush for that machine all over. And you don't do primary health care. You don't go to a clinic to check high blood pressure, to check diabetes, to check if you are HIV positive, to check syphilis, to check all the other things which in the past we used to check. People believe I've been under a machine and I'm healthy, I even know the sex of the child. These are some of the things that are distracting in the healthcare system. So what we have done, we put up a team in the national department with all the provinces represented. That must set norms and standards of what equipment you need in each healthcare system. Once you do so, when you build a team, by the way, this team is linked to the infrastructure team. Remember, health never used to have engineers. We now pushing that every province must have got an engineer in health. They meet with this one, so that technology becomes one team. When you build a clinic with this norms and standards, you don't build it as more than this only. You actually put together infrastructure as part of the thing, tendering process. That's a clinic that is built at this level. This is what it needs. So when you finish building it, it must come up with all those, and we must know it's the basic needs of that clinic, nothing more. It shouldn't be like what is happening now, where some companies sending a big machine just go to one province and mesmerize them, one official, and the following day the equipment is ordered, and you don't need it to the healthcare system. 20 million or even 100 million is gone. I've seen that happening. So one of the ways of fighting it, in our tender committees, we must include the professionals who are going to use this thing. Include the professors and the head of section. They must tell you whether this thing is useful or not, or whether it's just about money. That's why these norms and standards, you've got professionals in there. And very soon, I think they'll be published. The GX said, there was a question of which institution, well, what they did, I'm sure this guy can send to the chairperson, to the committee. So that you must know that when I'm in the Western Cape, this is where I'll find it. When I'm in KZN, this is where I'll find it. For the moment, we've got a list, but as I said, we want to roll it down, especially the smallest gene expert, which is found in, can even be found in clinics. The issue of tertiary hospital, that matter is being discussed all over. In fact, we've got a letter, which I received last year, from the chancellors of all the universities which have got major schools in them, all the eight universities, they are complaining about this issue. It has got too many problems. The provincialization of tertiary hospitals, which universities. Because university is a national competence. It's only in health where, and there are medications are named. For instance, the College of Medicine, because provinces have got their own problems, look at. And they can't look up at universities which they only. So you have got a situation where if you are a professor of art and culture and economics, you report national. But once you become a professor of medicine, there are lots of things you can't do unless the province agrees. And they are set of what the national policy is. What are the results? The College of Medicine approached me last year in this shortage of Honorable Mark Walter. They said there are 1,000 vacancies to train registrar, that specialist. There are 1,000 vacancies. Meaning the universities in South Africa can train 1,000 specialists now. But unlike in arts, economics, engineering, if you must train as a specialist, that province must hire you first. They must pay the registrar too. And they just did not pay them. They just did not. So it means the universities cannot train 1,000 specialists. They must go to the province and say, I went to the treasurer. Discussed this matter with the minister, and they gave us money. But in terms of your finance and fiscal policy, that money is going to provinces. Last month when we met, only four provinces had allocated this money. The others will tell you, no, in my executive council, they decided that this money was going to that. So we think as the last time we have the tertiary institution must be a national asset at that level. Even the referral system becomes important. Because at the moment, for instance, let me tell you what the situation. There is a war between Eastern Cape and Western Cape. There is a war between Mpumalanga, Northwest, Limpopo, and Gauteng. Yes, especially those areas. What is the war about? If you are in Limpopo, Mpumalanga, or Northwest, you are referral hospitals are called in Gauteng, the tertiary hospital. There's no other place in this war, it's just still Gauteng. When they refer patients, then they must pay. At the moment, there is war. That's not this guy's injury. I'm not taking the patient. And the patient suffer. It even increases the bounty reward. People realizing that, no, if I follow this type of the bounty, then I could no longer problem with referral. Now, a referral system to Kisaro Hospital must be a national asset and competence. That will even reduce the number of people who go and left from Kisaro Hospital. Where you budget for it, you budget for the training of the staff, for the professors. During the doctor strike, some of the reasons that doctors were strike for the first look at 7 years ago, but I don't have a push at a specialist here. Never created in the process. So, then the end result chapter two becomes a university success. It's linked to the success of the province. If the province economy or is not doing very well, or the province finances are not doing very well, that medical invest will go down. The case in point is all that should be invested. I'm not going to hide this. We all know this Eastern Cape is the Department of Health is in trouble in terms of, you know, some people are already saying, even here, we already seen the Minister of Education put up Section 100, why don't you do it in health? Anyway, that's the difference of the years. I remember there was such a suggestion, but the problem is that university, which is supposed to train people, is going down together with the fortunes of the province. Whereas university training must be, no university trains for people from its own province, it trains for the whole nation, not for one. Even nurses pick this up. If you check the compact, they said, why can't nursing training be a national competency? Because here, we depend on what our province wants. So I'm not saying everything is going to be national. But the issue of HR for the whole country cannot be provincialized. Where provinces even up there. So the best way to do it is that all the teacher hospitals with universities must be picked up to that level of national. We are working on this issue. Then the College of Medicine picked it up, the Vice Chancellor picked it up because they are always having a problem when they run their universities. That in art, culture, engineering, law, there's no problem. Come to medicine, they say no, you can't have the specialist. It's a joint with the province, the great appointment with the province. And if the province is not having enough money, this appointment should not be there. So universities have been frustrated, and the whole women plan all work under this condition. So we are busy looking into that issue, in this re-engineering. The issue of whether there are 1,000 people a day dying of HIV, I think it's a correct estimate. I would think so, and I'll tell you why I'm saying so. If you look at this, this is home affairs death register, health and death register, I mean death register. So, in 1997, this was the number of people who were dying in South Africa. By 2006, that number had doubled. So, death has actually doubled within a period of 9 years, meaning 300 extra people were dying. And we believe it's coinciding with that slide I showed you on HIV. So to reasonably believe that there must be 1,000 people who were added, because these are the overall deaths. What has made them down? I listened to the radio the other day, that was still this year, they were saying African people must also start learning to cremate, because they don't cremate, they go and bury them. It's not their culture to cremate, they said they must pay, because graveyards are full. That's true. But then they wrongly say it's because of population growth. Then I said, that's where the problem is. It's not population growth. It's because death is doubled, and we believe what caught the doubling coincides with that slide I showed you. Sorry, on. Oh, it's not the other one. You know, that slide I showed you about the 30-1997 compared to. Yes. By accident, I was looking for this slide. Termination of pregnancy. Maybe I can just show you. Look at the figure there. And I discovered 2 weeks ago that actually this is low. It's approaching close to a video of young girls who find it necessary to commit abortion. Look at those who are below 18. So there must be something grossly wrong that needs to be corrected. Anyway, no, yes, this is 1997, this is 2008, this is per year, this is from that time until now. And this is inside our health institutions, not outside. Those who are outside, I suspect are more than this nature. Yeah, the misoprostol. Misoprostol is registered by medical control council for ulcers, not for abortion. What we were being asked was that we must register it for abortion, so not to do it surgically and do it medically. I'm not very happy with that. Absolutely. Because what it means is that many young girls will find it easier to take a pill, pop it down their genital test, and, you know, the number of babies will be dropped in our hospitals. These mortalities for which hospitals are being achieved will increase to a level where, I mean, I told you this recent example about the cigarette. Some of those women there, they think uproar about the death of them. They came up with microprostate. Only that we can't name them because we can't arrest them. Because you can't arrest a person for being inside the hospital, for coming to the hospital. But you can see the problem. So rather than saying, let's register microprostate for abortion, the same thing, it's like saying, let's increase the mortality. Let's look at the source. Why are these young girls? And I don't think it's normal for young girls to choose abortion. No. I don't think it's normal. There's something wrong with we adults at that. And I was trying to outline it to you. How old are these girls who are falling pregnant? They are about 20, they were born around about 1994. That is the time in sub-Saharan Africa we are increasing the fight against HIV/AIDS. And we are preaching the message of ABC. In that message, somehow we thought family planning doesn't feature. You're using condoms for babies, so what? But we realize it's not working. Now we are saying, why don't we combine? Fighting HIV with condoms does not exclude family planning. It doesn't exclude it. So we need to bring it back in a big way. And we need to stop this problem. We have got evidence of some young girls who come in and commit abortion 3 times in 1 year. There was actually at least a case I know of where the abortion was committed 3 times in 6 months. They are young girls, they are very fertile. First pregnant, go to abortion, come back for the 3rd time in 6 months. I mean, that can't be normal. Can't be a normal human being. Something is lacking, and what is lacking is this. We assume at our age, because we know, because we're exposed to family planning, that they also know that they must prevent. They don't know. I just outline in graphic detail the message that young girls get of safe abortion, fast abortion. That's the aspect. So we need to fight and remove that and put that in the public agenda, in advance, on TV, on radio, all villages, the message of preventing pregnancy and unnecessary pregnancy. That's what we need to be doing. The question of medical aid not supplying contraception. I was really just giving an example of a curative system versus a preventive one. I really just gave this example of contraception. That at all times it's cheaper to prevent pregnancy than to do an abortion in terms of cost, but also in terms of human psychology. Look, if we have to commit an abortion, much as we're stopping breastfeeding the abortion, it's traumatic, as I'm sure you know, to the health worker and the young girl. Who committed 3 times? That young girl might actually be biologically finished. She might become infertile. So, the termination of pregnancy act was a stopgap measure to stop people who are in trouble, who have been raped, who fell pregnant by accident because of the male-female relationship in our country. But now, unfortunately, it's being used as a primary move for believers. That's where the problem is. Supposed to be an exception, but it's now being used as a rule. And that's why what the department wants to reverse. The issue of counseling and testing being compulsory.
Yeah.
Yes. These are lawmakers here, by the way. Look, but they've got to make the law. But we don't think we have arrived there yet. And I'll tell you why. I'll be very happy if everybody says. But I think when people are encouraged and offered, that's why we moved from VCT to HCT. And it's waiting for us. VCT was voluntary. It means people have to know and go and volunteer. Those who don't know cannot volunteer to test. But HCT is not necessarily compulsory, but it's provider initiated. We go out there. And since we have started to see the future, I have called contralism. I've shown them what HIV is doing to the country, the whole effective contralism. They want us to come into their villages. And one of them, your old member of parliament here, Koshi Samarao Chumiya, he actually started as a secretary general of country. He called the farmers are not in to his village that those, because it's June now, about to be June, they're going to have initiation. And you know, it's always a big war between initiation and HIV. So those initiate before they go to the mountain, they must be tested. HIV is continuing to so as to know. When the team arrived in the village, it was no longer the initiate. Everybody wanted to test, the whole village. And they all tested. So we are arranging with team and contralesa that we need to bring all traditional leaders in one village. Most probably it will be to a Yanis village because they're drunk. Or they're choosing it actually. That we need to choose a date in June, in the next 2 to 3 weeks, to go there and do a national launch so that we can send mobile teams to villages. They will send. If you remember, in March, I took the deputy president to the power station. The deputy president, the ESCOM CEO, the CEO of Maria and Robert, the general secretary of National Union of Mine Workers, the president of NUMSA, myself, the NDC of Elfinipo, we all went there. There are 10,000 workers under construction. And you know how they live through construction. We took them to test, all of them. And in one day, 902 are tested, just in one day. So when you take this test to people, even if you don't make any compulsory law, but you just make it available, they find it. The only place that is resistant for testing checkers is this seat of power. I have been fighting members of parliament to test in public. So, well, I know in the areas where you work, but it will help the community. It will help the country if it comes here to parliament. And please help me. Maybe the members of the committee must lead. But I want leaders of parties here. Much as the contralesa are going to be additional leaders to be launched, I want it launched here so that people must get used to it. This issue of testing 15 million people, it's because we wanted a period of heightened activity. Many people believe, no, we must reach 15 million and stop. No. It was a heightened activity. It must happen every year. Even if I've already tested 4 times in 1 year. It's very important to keep on repeating. So as to get used to it. So all I'm saying is, if we make it available, they will test. When we run at universities, remember, some of the young girls were excited. That's good. And I didn't know that. They said, if I go to a health institution, the way the health workers look at me when I say I want to be tested, they look at me with suspicion, what is this young girl done? Then they said, when you see at university, I feel very safe and I'm here with you. And that's what we need to go. Take it out to the farm, take it out to villages, etc., etc. The issue of health professionals, I think what was lacking is to keep on producing, that will show you a health, an HR plan that will produce so many and all that. On what this honorable Mark Walters will be that those the figures given there that we need to produce this and that. Let's take an example of doctors. Nurses have already mentioned. Without that summit, we wouldn't have changed anything. I know from the summit how many more colleges, how many must be renovated, etc. Now, let's take an example of doctors. We've got 8 medical schools. For the past 10 years, they've been producing 1,200 doctors non-stop, regardless of what you do. Now, there are two issues we are doing there. Even before you come up with a plan, you need to put that. We have chosen five of the biggest medical schools in the country, or which are the Senegalese population, for a massive reconstruction. As you know, Chris Ali Barabana, Roger Mukari, Walter Sisulu, Kimura De Reed, and we are building a ninth medical school in Limpopo. The president announced that during the State of the Nation. We need to do that. Cuba had only one medical school in 1996. They now have 27, and their population is only 11 million. So we need to start increasing them by putting the buildings, and we are doing so. Here in Western Cape, we are aware we've already given 1 billion rand for Tigerberg Hospital to be expanded. So we must expand this. We are going to then move to universities in Bloemfontein. All the universities must be given a big capacity. Together with their, by the way, it's not only the hospitals, the faculty. Chairperson, you study books together. That faculty was built at certain very small, in 1950. Figure out this completely that it is. So you move out of that here, you put a new hospital, you put a faculty of medicine, you calculate the number of people it must produce. Our belief is that if we do that, we can increase the number of doctors producing as well as 3 times. And that's our dream, that we need to do that. But first, we must have this facility. We've already had a meeting. But as a stopgap measure, last week, Friday, I had a meeting with all the deans of the medical schools in the country to find out, even before you give them infrastructure, what is needed for them to increase the intake. Even if they teach university in 40, 30, 40, 50 for the time being. Because why I did that, we have already done so with FETS, so with that we didn't announce it. We work together with FETS. Ordinarily, they take 240 medical students per annum. And we ask them, what is that which you need from us as the government to increase this number? They work it out and say most of the learners, the reason that they can't take them, they are on the borderline of passing, they must take them, they need extra support, extra tutors. And we calculate that we find that for them to take 40 more, we need only 8 million rand. And I said, to me, expenditure in health is never expenditure, it's always an investment. If we invest, I mean, not expenditure, expenditure in human resources in any country must be regarded as an investment. If we just produce one extra doctor, that's a big investment. And I said, let's go on. Take these 40 students, we'll take. And they took them. They started in the there's now an extra 40 students. So I called all the other teams of the 7 other medical schools and say, why not? Why can't you do the same thing? What is that which you need? So that while we are giving infrastructure, you can actually be increased. And many of them are willing, they're waiting on the plan. They said I must give them 8 weeks. They'll show us the plan of what actually is that which we need to do. Because the issue of believing we'll recruit doctors all over the world, that showed you the map of the world. Not going to work. We need to produce on our own. And we'll do so, and then we send that we can have a clear plan of what needs to be produced, where and how many. The issue of researching a decade of denialism, we have not done so in health. We think it will just take a lot of our resources. We know already that things are bad. And there are some researchers who have done it, Honorable Makota. One researcher said, no, 300,000 people have died, but these are projections. So we thought it will just take our energies. The maps I'm showing you that the situation is bad, as it is, and that's what we need to solve. The issue of NHI, I never mentioned it because it's not part of what you call even though it plays a big role, but the time of talking about any tax is coming, and I can assure you, we're going to talk and discuss it as much as we did with local government elections. No village or no human being will be left out of the debate when the time comes. But some of the things we are doing already, like the re-engineering and all that, is already, because let me be honest, NHI without the re-engineering of the healthcare system is going to be extremely expensive. Under the present conditions, where everything is procedure which is expensive, one professor said NHI they cost 850 billion. I thought he's not telling the truth. I discovered that he did under the present conditions of the healthcare which you are running, which is characterized by four things that I've said. unsustainable, very expensive, destructive, you know, cost-centric or curative. The engineering is to change that, is then that energy will start working. Otherwise, if you do that, it will be. Even if you give me a single run, it will just disappear. The money is disappearing right now. Very soon I'll be, when we discuss the NSI, I'll be giving you in graphic details what I'm talking about. Some of the stories are shocking of what is being charged in South Africa for health care. It will actually even change the devil, you know. The specifics. I think when I gave you the National Strategic Plan, I gave you specifics. Chairperson, let me say, I was not aware that because if I go into that, it's a very big problem. The issues of targets and specifics and how far we are within the annual plan, which we'll bring to you. That's the annual report that will give you the strategy that we'll do this March here. We'll show you the figure, how many kids were immunized, how many of these and all that. If I had to bring that today, then I'll explain the whole thing. But suffice to say, it's said, the specific, the target, how far we are, and we'll show you within the annual plan. Obviously, you are going to call me here to give them the annual, the annual report, not the plan. Social grant, yes, a honorable member said, research has been done. I was not aware of the HCT one. This thing has been a big debate in cabinet. Even from the time when the Minister of Social Development was the Honorable Minister of Oras Reyes, it has been a debate. If you go to any village and do cabinet with the people or government, even members of parliament, this story will come from ordinary people. That social grounds are causing a lot of teenage pregnancy. You go to schools, principals will tell you many kids stay away because of teenage pregnancy. Now, it's difficult not to believe it because you see an upset in these pregnancies. Now, the Department of Social Development was supposed to do this. Now, you are telling me the health system has also done it and denied it. Then it coincides with the findings of social development. After the study by the Department of Social Development, they said, we really found many of these young girls who were pregnant in the first 2 years, they don't claim health support. They don't register. Many newborn babies are not registered in the first 2 years. And their argument is, if the target was child support, surely immediately after delivery, the next stop will be the social development to register. Why wait for 2 years? So we still don't know, but that's their finding. But from my side, as the Minister of Health, I am coming to believe that this lack of family planning facilities rather child support will. If you keep, and I'm saying so because, for instance, anecdotal, when I visited some of the clinics, there is still some semblance of family planning, and the nurses will tell you that the demand is high. One nurse told me, it's high, especially for those kids who had their first pregnancy. They realized that it was wrong. But if there are no facilities for family planning, they won't do family planning, and they will go and do abortion. Why are all these abortions if people wanted child support? Why is the figure of abortion going so hard? They don't want the baby. It's because it's an accident which you're not dealing with. Yes, in Brazil, in the Brazilian work of primary health care, which will come and show you the details later because we want to adopt that model. Yes, every child who has fallen pregnant because there's a community health agent in every ward or in every village, they make sure that the child, the girl is on contraception. He's going to school, he then got the register for child support. If these two conditions are not met, they all register for child support. But in our right based society like South Africa, they might say, no, that is extreme and all that. But me, I would like that type of method because I want a teenage pregnancy to be an accident, not a norm. We are starting to accept it as a norm in South Africa rather than an accident. And this campaign must be run. In the re-engineering, which I'll show, we have to establish a very strong school health program. And that school health program must have a big, we'll have to have a big component on the reproductive health rights. So this is the consequence, etc. In 1995, I visited a school in Harlem, in New York. The principal there is a lady principal, came with a very innovative method. You know, when I was in the NBC, I tried to discuss it, and it looks like around things are not interesting. She was tired of teenage pregnancy. She decided that no, she's putting a curse at the school. And the parents are fighting, but she was very strong. She pushed and put a curse there. And made a law that any girl who is pregnant, they will never be allowed there at school unless they come with a child. Woman put in that curse.
It's not
allowed.
It's not allowed.
Oh no, you are encouraging teenage pregnancy. That lady principal was very strong. She established that church and put it there and said, girls, you want to come back to school? Bring your child along. Because she argued that many girls find it easy to fall pregnant because they don't carry the responsibility. It's a grandmother who carries it. They don't even do a fee. You buy, the government provides. Infant feeding formula, the grandmother, she goes to school, go and fetch another baby. And, you know? So that principal said, no, she must take responsibility. And they bring this child to the class. If it is brave, they all start to play the rap. She gets trapped and said, no, by the way, there's a baby beside. You can't go to play. Go and take care of your baby. If the others are going to sport, no, girl, my friends are sweet. But your baby is. You can't go that direction. You know, and she said it took 3 years. The teenage pregnancy in that school dropped tremendously. Now they are fully pregnant. Because she said the boys also lose interest if they realize you are a mother. The young boys. The still young one girl. If they realize this one is good. See this some bad in here. Say no, next this one will be is a big mother. What?
The father.
Well, the basic reality, I accept that criticism, but the basic reality is that in all these things, HIV, AIDS, pregnancy, it's the women who suffer. So we put the emphasis on them because we need to protect them, not because we undermine it. I know there was this debate, for instance, about the father, but how many of these fathers are known? Yes. And that slide I've shown you, actually tells us the story. When it ended in January, they were saying there were 57 kids in what is this in Mpopo, Indiana. It was all over the newspaper. When they say 57 kids were pregnant. You remember the principal said is the kids impregnating each other. The school kids, what about the boys? That slide I showed you there, 3 years on, is telling a different story. This. And so it must inform our approach. Yes. This tells a different story. It's not the young boys who impregnate the young girls. It's others. Others who are out of school, who are not there inside the school. That's what Christ shows. It shows intergenerational effect. Why at that age it's more girls who are HIV positive and later on in life it's more males. It's intergenerational effect. So the pregnancy argument, and the Minister of Basic Education has done kind of told me, if you get to many dysfunctional schools and find the kids who are pregnant, many of them are orphans. They are vulnerable. They've got no mother to take care of or to advise. They don't have money. They need some money, and this man offers them a lot of money. So that's why we need to give the target to those who are victims and it's the girls. We can do something about the maids, but most of the time, you won't even know them. That's a fact. And you know, Chairperson, this matter we try to solve. For instance, in education, we made a law that any teacher who has got an affair with a school kid gets fired. You know that. It's a law. I was the MEC for education. I know how difficult it is to apply that law. Because these teachers have got financial muscle. So just go and tell the mother that you keep quiet to support this child. You keep quiet. You might have forgotten in 2006 a big story in City Press. Where they were saying that the principal who impregnated the young girl and were attacked at the state is doing nothing. That girl was below age, which means for sanitary rate. We sent the station commander to that training for them to report the case, and we said the station commander must take it personally. And the mother fired that station commander and said, you've got no business to be talking to my family like that because you're not going to help us about this child. This man who did this is supporting us, and I'm not going to disclose it. It's giving us money for food and all that. So it's again gender relations and financial relations. It's causing a big problem in the country. That's why the issue of empowering women we shouldn't have to get as a slogan or ideology. It's very important in our everyday life that women need to be empowered economically, legally, you know, so that they don't become vulnerable to these things. So, the translation of the plan into the ground, the chairperson, before the end of this year, I'll show you an elaborate plan. All the three engineering, primary, and plan, all that. I can assure you, this is not just talk show. We are going to show you elaborate plans. I thought in order for these plans, for instance, the maternal mortality, the mortality, infant and mother, you need professionals. You need universities. I've been meeting these people. And I can't disclose the plan before all of them agree. So I have to do my budget speech and my speech because I'm just about to finish my consultation. I met, for instance, the Society of the Association of Obstetricians. They gave an input. The Society of Pediatricians, they gave an input. The Society of Family Physicians, they gave an input. Last week when I met the deans of all the eight medical schools, I didn't only discuss HR, I discussed this mortality. What are the roots of universities? Many of them are doing a good job, but not accessible to government. The university will go and choose one small village and do a lot of miracles there, only in that village. And I'm saying I want this school to be universal. They are also doing a plan. I've shown them what my proposal is on this issue. And we are very excited. I put the decision back during the budget 16 if we finish because you have to consult these people and move together with them. It's them that will say this is the plan. And this is how it's going to be implemented. And I can assure you that this means naming of primary education. We've got no option on it, especially to reach the Millennium Development Goals. So I will outline the plan and we'll see if it works or not, but I've got confidence that it has got well. The issue of provinces understanding this plan. Yes, we picked it up during Minimac. Many MEC ministers, you are putting this plan to us. We now starting to understand this thing, but back home, where we come from, nobody understands. Even our executive council. When you say this is the route to follow, they say, no, MEC, we just want more money for ourselves. There are many other important areas of life where you need money. So there was an agreement that I need to go province by province. I've done so. I start with the executive council, the opinion, and the MEC. I have come to them step by step, as I've shown you here. I was only showing the Linear Development Goals I should have thought all this time about this thing. Pregnancy, teenage pregnancy, abortion, family planning statistics, the number of women who die, the districts which have high parents. I showed them all that. Then when I finish with the executive council, I go to the health department. I start with the HOD, to the rat cleaner, to the media hall, I go through this with them and show them what needs to be done. And in the East Free State, the cleaner says, no. You've shown the executive council, you've shown the whole Department of Health, I want mayors and municipal managers. And he calls them, all the mayors and municipal managers. I show them all these things. Then I even called doctors in private practice and doctors in public practice. I've gone through all these things. I've done routed, uncheated, and the very latest I've done is Eastern Cape. I'm left with Western Cape, Northern Cape, Mpumalanga, and Northwest. Four. The other five are already done. I've shown them this. And some members of the council appreciate themselves. No, now we understand why the MEC wants this and that. We understand that they have problems in the country that we need to help with. I'm trying to make sure that colleges move along with us. So the plans we are doing is also understood because of that. One of the reasons is when Free State ran out of ARVs, remember in 2003, the then Minister of Health, Minister Barbara Hocken, put up a team called Inner Credit Support Team, headed by the former 18. I mean, the former Deputy Auditor General of the country, Professor Lewis, when they were going to study what happened, they didn't study HIV/AIDS only. They studied the overall management. And one of the things on the report was that we are running 10 different countries in health. 9 provinces plus national, each one is doing their own thing. And part of that, when I brought that report, was that we need to start working together as one country with 9 different provinces, not 10 different departments of health. And we're trying to bring them together. That's why, for instance, when we issued the ARV tender to cut the price of ARVs by 3%, it could not have been done if provinces were still procuring individuals. We came together in the economy of scale, and we procured 10 times, and we achieved 53% cut. We are now looking towards establishing a central procurement authority. And the global fund has given us 40 million grants for that. Central procurement authority. We have already asked provinces that all ARVs, all TB drugs, all vaccines, all drugs to do with pregnancy and childbirth, we have procured them with central, so that they can't be any shortage. Then we'll move to the other track. So in that regard, I would say, yes, provinces are starting to come to the fore. And that is why in this regard, we want to see what provinces do and what ministers do. That's why it also emphasizes why teacher hospitals must not be left there to in the provinces, must be put up. The question of family visits, whether there's enough person power. When I addressed the NEC summit in terms of this engineering of healthcare, I said if a hospital got four nurses, I'll prefer to remove one for that nurse to do primary health care. There better be a shortage in the hospital for that primary health care level. We better have some money, because if you put the four nurses in the hospital, they don't go out to do primary health care. They are waiting for a catastrophe. They are waiting for an accident to happen. So you will send one of them out to stop this thing from happening outside, at schools, in the communities, as the press will later outline. And by the way, this issue of what to at schools is not just theory. I put together teams from March who are working on the plan, teams of experts who work with children and all that. This was because when we said we were going to do 8 at schools, remember there was a big uproar. Some were even threatening to go to court and interdict. Instead of fighting, I brought them together in the room and said, no. We can't be fighting about the children of Africa. They are in trouble. They are getting pregnant. They are doing abortion. They are HIV positive. Of all these problems. And we fight it. So we put the team together and say, let's work on these issues. And I will apply the plan to you today. And I'm sure you'll be happy about the plan. The healthy lifestyle address. Yes. I gave a notice we are going to do it. I don't understand the mentality of putting a sportsman on TV during prime time and put that sportsman and their success on alcohol. They don't go together. There's no sportsperson who becomes successful because of alcohol. But that's what adverts are trying to show. They show a very successful sportsperson in cricket. You know, someone who is an idol to our kids and show them drinking alcohol there and think the success was caused by the alcohol. That's misleading. And you remember the same thing about cigarettes was there. We know anybody who smokes will never be the best person in the world. It's not possible. You don't go together to see. So we need to confront this. Even if the perpetrators of this are trying to tell us, for instance, that there's no relationship between advertising and alcohol consumption, we know it's not true. It's false. Because why did they spend so much money? The first three breweries, the top three breweries in South Africa, are spending R1 billion. And I'm on advertising only. Can't spend R1 billion if you are not gaining anything. It's because they must be gaining. Some of these things are put in schoolyards. They just said, no, we want to sponsor our school. And you get into a school. You don't see any other board, but you see a board written there, the name of the school and Castle Lark. I think the whole school is about Castle Lark. Yeah? Some villages don't even have a board to show where the village is. They show a board to show where the tavern in the village is. So when you direct a person to the village, you direct them by the tavern. Become the center of life there. This is wrong. And so we are not going to leave this thing. Unfortunately, I'm happy I'm not alone. When we went to Moscow last month, when the United Nations and the World Health called a meeting about this, there were 90 ministers of health. They are all in agreement in the Moscow Declaration. They believe this thing must be taken to the United Nations in September for heads of state. We must hide them. Against alcohol, against smoking, poor diet, exercise, etc. But our biggest target will be alcohol, smoking, and salt. The salt intake that causes people to need more kidneys and all that is for lowering the salt intake. And with the less of stigma, we have to accept this thing. Otherwise, the world is doomed. The people who are HIV positive, to what extent are they vulnerable to malaria? We don't have any studies, but because basically, it's because, I mean, biologically speaking or medically speaking, yes, when you've got HIV/AIDS, you've got lower immunity. It's easy to be infected by anything. But I think we don't have a problem because by and large, we've put malaria under control. We have not yet defeated it, we've put it under control. And we are lucky for some reason. The highest high burden malaria is around our border with Botswana and Zimbabwe, especially around Durban district in Limpopo. But coincidentally, that's the lowest HIV prevalence area in the country. So some of these fortunes, God was intervening here and there in this old way. Because if Durban was a high burden HIV AIDS, with high burden malaria, life would have been very difficult for the people there. But for some reason, HIV is the lowest there. Malaria was up, but we are doing it with this in-house residual spray. So malaria, I can confidently say, we put it under control. And 8 countries in Africa have formed what is called E8, or Elimination Aid. That working together in these 8 countries, South Africa, Swaziland, Namibia, Zimbabwe, Gambia, etc. We have struck together, we believe by 2020, we can actually eliminate malaria. And the success that South Africa scored on the Trans-Limpopo Corridor, which we saw in Mozambique, it's already showing big results. And I must confess proudly that South Africa is the anchor in all this. Our expertise is quite higher than a trend higher than the rest of the country. So they actually expect us to help them, and we are helping. And our expert, Dr. Manusa, is regarded as a world expert on this issue. All over the world, in WHO, they do quality meetings about this issue. So on that score, we think we can safely say we are heading somewhere on malaria, not a crisis. It will become a crisis with those people who are fighting against DDT. Because we are arguing that Europe and America eliminated malaria using DDT. They now want to cheat the ladder and say, Africa, you must stop, you must live under net. And I just believe that is very practical. My test because of net, 700 million are visited all over. I don't think that's how we defeat malaria. I don't think so. So some of us, the African Union last month, in Namibia, discussed this issue, the minister of trade. We want to eliminate malaria, let's use what the other developed countries use, so that we are all equal footing. The condoms, we are increasing the use of female condoms. We're distributing 1 million. Clear. This year we're distributing 6 million. You will say, of course, it's not much, but we keep on increasing. And I'm sure next year we'll increase again. The biggest problem is economic failure, and women, of course, will complain that every time it comes to us, we talk about economic failure. But it's a reality. One female condom costs 8 rand on the state tender, whereas one male condom costs 24 cents. So, yes, 24 cents versus 8 rand. So, it's much easier for anybody to buy male condoms than female. But we are increasing because we said the cost cannot stop us. But they are not increasing at the same rate as the male condom. That's the reality. But we have tried our best to increase them to 6 million. But the issue of power relations will be resolved by the Millennium Development Number 3, the issue of gender equality. Because there are still power relations here, matter of way. Men just say, no, I'm not going to use the condom. And if it's a male who is a sugar daddy, where the girl meets man and so forth and say, I'm not going to use the condom, what chance does that sugar girl stand? Again, such a powerful issue. If you say, look, I'm going to talk about sex or if you are a sex worker. So we need to establish centers like the one they did in India. And we are discussing that with the Bill and Melinda Gates. They signaled to India last day they are doing something very powerful with sex workers.
about this issue of giving them that power. I was very impressed, so that the relationship becomes sort of equal, even between sex workers. Because if that doesn't happen, we'll always have this problem. So we are trying to resolve that and distinguish it in some way. Chairperson, I think I've answered most. It's not all questions.
Thank you very much, Minister. I think you'll try to answer most of the questions. And I don't think members, there's somebody who needs to try to follow up on anything. Because this of yours,
unless it's a matter of.
And that's our question. No, thank you very much. If members, you agree that we don't need to ask any more questions now, except to be given. Right. Can I take this opportunity to thank the minister for coming in and giving us this information? And we are very, though in thanking you, we see the difficulty that we are in South Africa as far as the Union Development goes. Obviously, we started late, and we started with a heavy burden by the time that we started. So, I'm not going to say whether we will meet the target or won't meet the target, but definitely we are in trouble. But the things that you are promising us that are going to be done makes us hope that things are going to move towards the right direction. On your request, on members leaving from the fight, I'm going to continue requesting members to probably try and make sure that we are the example. We go and test ourselves so that people could follow us.
And I say, what's left that the chief leaders promised to address the meeting of which so that they take up this issue. Yes, this issue is about informing the public. I know many members here know their data. But members of the public, people who follow you as leaders, would like to see it happening at the seat of power. That this thing is happening everywhere. As we are going to do it in the seat of power in the village. I said in June we are going to launch in Port Elizabeth. Because they said our community, if they want to see the traditional leader, they're taking the lead. Yes, I've been speaking to churches. I don't know why we are slow with churches. Because I want to take different churches. And we said we'll also, with the Minister of Agriculture, speak to the farmers. Let them allow us into the farms and they must also take the lead. Everybody who has got some boy, they regard as a leader, must see that leader standing up. In that case, there won't be an issue of forcing people. They don't just go. I mean, when we went to meet, we went with union leaders. The Secretary General of UN, Mr. Frank Valeri, told the workers that we are endorsing this plan, we want the government to do it as a union. And the President of UN said so. And when we left, 900 workers were issuing them to be tested just in that day. Because they saw their leaders, they found that this thing is important. So the issue of leadership is important. Very, very important.
Okay, thank you. Just a small note to say, not only with HIV, with all the problems that we had here, for instance, the issue of lifestyle, the food, the exercise, you know, things need to start in Parliament. Look, we've been given cream and jam. I mean, honestly, we need to start here.
Thank you. I don't want to open a discussion. You see, yeah, I don't know. Honorable Ben's profile has actually invited me. He's chairing the committee on. No, about this lifestyle problem that I need to advise. If you remember what committee is chairing. Yes, I am going to give advice. And out of it will be a bit of medical. Like the issue of what I remember to parliament. Because, I mean, can't just be exercised. It used to be a diet, even if I can't control a diet in my home. But what you eat here in Parliament or in public settings must be very clear. Yeah. Yes. And you want access. When you say we need to sleep on these things. And in the Department of Health, I actually kept them. Every time they provide food, when they can invest in the Department of Health, this healthy thing I'm talking about must be seen. Even with me, it's a certain I'm sure you are aware I was not of this size a few months ago. Because I want to give just an example. It's not that yes. No. Healthy lifestyle. Because people are grown here and we invited you. You are Chairperson King. You remember that healthy lifestyle? The AU said the first people from the world can do. Yeah, must be a healthy lifestyle week. When we launched it in 2 times, so we called the chairperson. And we said, these are the things that we must do. Exercise, diet. And I said, by the way, I must see my example. And I started doing that. The recommendation is, if you just walk, just walking, not even running and all that, just for 30 minutes, at least 3 times a week. Scientifically, that's enough. Because many members here don't walk, by the way. We're always in cars. No chance of walking. Even going up the stairs, you're always in a lift. Yes, when I came here, this is 4th floor. I told my security, you were shocked because I'm joking. I said, let's go up the stairs. Said, it's 4th floor. I said, it's okay. Let's do it. Yes, I used the stairs. Used the stairs, and I used the stairs when I came here. And then you were shocked. He said, I'm going for the lift. I said, no, I deliver it here, not to eat. If you keep on doing that and getting used to it, it will work. Because during that time, the meetings we attended were in the evening. We got professors from all over, University of Eastern Africa. They gave us tape measures to measure the body mass index. All of us failed. Your height versus your body mass index. We never would. There was only one MEC who was there. Former MEC for our state, Harvard Shampoo. All of us. They said you are bigger than you are supposed to be. And if we give to all of you here and measure our body mass index, there's going to be a lot of embarrassment. Yes, and you are aware that America's specific. And so this problem of obesity. They are now banning the advertising of hamburgers and all that. They are done to change. They've calculated the health budget. It's too heavy. That's why they've got this vitality. Whereby your medical need must pay for you to go and exercise rather than waiting for you to get a heart disease. So if you allow me to speak to Honorable Scott and I put the menu there of what must happen. And members of parliament, especially our committee, adopt it so that the other committees must follow. Then we should be changed.
So I decided to allow this member to accept. I decided to allow, I think it's very interesting. But I think one area that we never look at, especially the people who are in the corporate world, you never look at how much stress causes all these problems. Not only outside there, but even here in Parliament. And this is something that we need to look into. I know one thing, somebody asked Mr. Mandela, why does he like eating? He was still a president then. And he said, you know, I don't really look at what type of food, but when I'm stressed, I eat what I used to eat as a child that I like. Sometimes, I'm sure most of us would understand that. When you come back home very stressed, you just want 10 minutes to go there, you to that one and you like it. Whether it's healthy or unhealthy, but that's really what makes you feel comfortable. But I think one of the things that we need to do, we're going to be looking at so that we can look at what is on the side. But I think we need to look at first, even talk about it in Parliament, even debate it, how to really do it first. Thank you. I was saying thank you very much.
I'll call the deputy president if you are consulted. He's one of the best when it comes to healthy life. And I actually envy him. Every morning, he will exercise. And, you know, he doesn't leave any phone and take on healthy lifestyle. He might actually also be your idol to copy from.
We're just finishing. So we are very thankful, Mr. Minister, for what you have given us. And it gives us hope. Especially the dignity that goes to female. Because if we don't, I'm told, I live a little bit about told that the people who control everything are the children. If they say no, things won't happen. If they say yes, things will happen. So, it's from the Bible. I'm quoting the Bible. I'm trying to quote the Bible. No. So I believe in that of bringing back to the same as I think is very important. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Maybe tomorrow WhatsApp will be